Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Oh, you know what, Steve? You had the piece of audio of the Toronto mayor. What's
Rob
his
name? Ford.
Rob Ford.
This guy
Chris
is...
Chris Farley.
He is.
Yes.
Chris Farley.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely deranged.
And he, you know, I guess... Is he out now? Do they...
No. They're trying.
They're trying to strip him of duties.
They're trying.
Apparently,
it's a lot more difficult, apparently, in Canada.
Yeah.
To
once you're elected...
Get someone out of office.
You can do the job, no matter what happens.
Self-professed. He's admitted... Initially, if you don't know the story, there were rumors that he had smoked crack and that he was an alcoholic and that he was just completely inappropriate. He denied all that. And then finally, he admitted, yes, he smoked crack.
Yeah.
And had some issues. And now, since then, will you figure he would reel it in?
Right.
It's been 10 times worse.
Well, he is at a function where there are children.
Right.
I guess he's, I don't know how old they are. I guess they're grade school kids or whatever. But he's in front of them, and this interview is asking him some questions about his drug use and his alcohol abuse and stuff like that. And listen to what he says.
Things start relatively sedate, but when I ask why he decided to admit his crack use after months of denial, he gets so angry he forgets who's in the room.
I just had enough. I was sick and tired of all these allegations and all this excuse my words, and that's all it is. Sorry, kids. I shouldn't have sworn in front of the kids, but after a while, I know what I'm doing is right. I'm serving the people. I'm saving taxpayers.
All right, anyhow, and then he goes on and on.
It was an S-bomb. Sorry, kids, I guess I shouldn't curse in front of the kids. And then that's pure Chris Farley.
He's a mess.
Totally.
He's comedy gold, man. I love this guy.
You got to hear his, do we have him admitting, they ask him if he's had smoke crack recently.
Oh.
Go to that clip because his.
Wait, what is that other one, Casey?
Oh, you never, the P one?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Let's take a little audio history here. This is from last week.
All right.
And apparently there was a female staffer had suggested that he had approached her about this doing this kind of act, which is, you know, going to Tuna Town on a woman. And
on a woman, yeah.
Right. So okay. Here's his response.
Oh, and the last thing was Olivia Gondak. It says that I wanted to eat her. I've never said that in my life to her. I would never do that. I'm happily married. I've got more than enough to eat at home. Thank you very much.
Oh my God. What is wrong with him?
Why? By the way, the interview, like he was wrapping up, and that was, I didn't get to mention the allegation
It says that I wanted to eat her. I've never said that in my life to her. I would never do that. I'm happily married. I've got more than enough to eat at home.
Oh, my God.
By the way, what woman doesn't love to hear that she has more than enough pee? it's ridiculously big.
That's hilarious. All right, and then what was the other one? Hasn't drank in 3 weeks?
Right. Here's his you know, this is the more self-reflective side of Rob Ford.
You haven't been drinking at all?
I haven't touched a drop of alcohol in 3 weeks.
A drop.
I'll take a urine test right now. And if there's alcohol, none, zero. I'll do a urine test right
When's
now.
When's the last time for drugs?
Long time. I'm talking like it was like a long time
ago.
What
about drugs?
Yeah, it was a long time. Over 3 weeks.
Yeah. Haven't had a drop in 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
Yeah. I liked how the initial admission to smoking crack was that he was having one of his binges. He was like, Alf on an alcoholic
If
binge.
I did it, I was so blown out drunk.
Right.
That's why. So you can take comfort in the fact that the only time I use crack is when I'm completely bombed and out of control.
And just his verbiage, like probably in one of my drunken stupor. Probably?
Yeah.
I mean, what's probably mean?
You're a political official. You're a mayor.
Hey, let me go to Marie. She's got something interesting. Hi, Marie. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's happening?
So, I don't know if any of you guys subscribe to Spirit Airlines, but I got an email from Spirit Airlines this weekend. It had a big advertisement that said, "We're not smoking crack. We'll fly you to Toronto for $29.50 both ways."
Seriously? I mean, it was a legitimate ad?
The legitimate ad from Spirit Airlines that flies out of Atlantic
That's
City.
Awesome.
Well, you got to commend that.
Hilarious. I love that.
So the ad also had like a profile picture of him and like smoke all around him.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know if you saw
that. Doesn't sound real. But
the footage yesterday, thanks. Preston. He was at some event, some political. You know, maybe he was actually at his office or whatever. But he's running around like a madman and accidentally bulldozes. You see that? You seen this footage, Casey?
No.
This female politician and just knocks her to the ground. But he's running around. He looks like Chris Farley doing the Matt Foley sketch.
That's funny. I wanted to go back to the where he curses in front of the school kids.
Yeah.
Because that brought up the topic amongst us of cursing in front of kids.
Do you still have a curse jar? Or did you have a curse jar?
No, we never had one.
I thought
those.
You did.
Nah. We let them fly. We let them fly when necessary.
When did you start to realize you'd gotten a little more liberal with that?
I don't know.
So have you always?
No. Okay. No. I mean, when they're little bitty, definitely we wanted to stay away from that. But from time to time, in moments of frustration.
When you need to add gravitas to a situation.
Yeah, a little punch to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Casey, I know you definitely don't, right?
I don't.
Oh, he's very good.
Yeah, extremely strict.
In fact, Steve is cursed in front of my kids more than I have.
I have. Yeah. Because he doesn't. We don't know that we're on the yeah.
I have to warn you guys now because when we talk to each other, we're very liberal. So when we do our conference call at night, you just did it on Sunday night, and I didn't want to tell you, but you were talking, and you just said something like, F it, and we'll just do
this. What, were you on the speakerphone?
Yeah, because I had Seamus in the car with me.
Oh, you definitely got to share with us when that's going on.
I know. Yeah. I know. But it was just like one of those deals.
Unless you could just blame it on Uncle Steve.
Right.
Did Uncle Steve, did he ask what Uncle Steve meant by that?
No. I don't, because we don't curse in front of our children, they don't know what it means. Like,
right.
They don't have any idea what anything means. We had a kid over during the summer, and Seamus comes up. He goes, this kid said two bad words, and we're like, what? And I can't remember what the other one was, but one of them was suck.
Yeah, okay.
So it's adorable.
No, I said that because Casey and I pretty much grew up in the same household. Like, my parents never cursed. My dad a little more as we got older, but my mom never. Like, I've heard my mom curse, I think maybe once or twice in her entire life.
Are other words considered bad words in your house, like stupid and?
Yeah, that was the other bad word. Stupid and suck were the two bad words. Yeah,
stupid. We're not allowed to say that.
We would get stars if we called people stupid.
Right. Sea sucker. We weren't allowed to say that.
In fact, Steve, that's the way you meld them together.
Wasn't that your nickname,
stupid sea sucker? I mean, it's my dad cursed all the time. He would mix it with the King's English, but we had her. It's classic Christmas story.
Right.
We would hear it all the time.
We don't even say, oh, my God. And we don't say, oh, my gosh. We say, oh, my goodness.
Oh,
because it's
let me ask you,
at some point, will you relax on that? Do you think as they get a little bit older?
Of course,
what I figured.
The world will take care of it for you. You don't have to worry.
It does.
Because when they go out and about, they're going to hear it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So for right now, I just want my kids to be kids. You know what I mean? So like my my kids actually learn more from their schoolmates who learn from their older siblings. Do you understand?
My older brother cursed less around me than my father did.
Yeah.
I mean, and my mother was just like, she couldn't stop it.
Case, we weren't allowed to say hate either.
Yeah.
We didn't hate anything.
Yeah. We were encouraged to hate.
No, I know what you mean. At a younger age, words like stupid and hate and stuff like that were completely outlawed. And I had to tell my wife, I'm like, look, if the kid, hates green beans, that's okay. I mean, I you can use hate in that reference, I say, because it's going to be too hard for them to find a descriptive word about food that they don't like.
I am not very fond of green beans.
Right, exactly. So Father? I'm saying now it's okay. You can't say,
hater,
I hate this person or I hate you.
Right.
That's a bad use of the word hate, but hate is a legitimate word.
We'd sit down for dinner, and my father said, so did you meet anybody you hate today?
Yeah.
Sea sucker?
Oh, yeah.
Sea sucker.
Sea sucker. And then he'd say, but I mean, that was... I mean, they're going to hate things,
right?
And they're going to hate people.
I don't want my kids to be like the last ones to learn about everything in their class, but I also don't want them to be the first ones, and I also don't want them to be the ones that learn these things from their parents.
Well, there's also a real serious intent to preserve their innocence as long as humanly possible.
Right. Yeah. Which is noble. Yeah. It's noble.
But at a certain point...
Well, you start to cross it, the line begins to blur. It's like, okay, but I also, they're starting to get to an age where I don't want them to be so innocent that they're completely naive of what the real world is all about, so you want to prepare them as well. So you softly start to call them a sea sucker, things like that, very slowly.
I hate you, son.
When you get into a knife fight and you're saying, dag nabbit?
Yeah, you begin with, I hate you, son.
Right.
And then you move on.
Right, that'll learn them.
I love you less than I thought.
It's funny, though. We will have
my little accident
on rare occasions, because we have visitors that stop by the studio almost every day to kind of watch what we do and hang out. And every now and then we put an age restriction on it. But every now and then somebody will come in with a younger kid and we say, well, look, when we're off air, the language is pretty liberal and we do a lot of drugs. And usually the comment is they've heard everything. And I'm like, well, okay, they may have heard the words.
Yeah.
But when you put them next to other words that begin to describe what one might do in a certain act and so forth, they haven't quite heard everything yet.
The difference is before Da Vinci put the paint on the canvas, it was just paint in a room. We turned it into art.
Yes, exactly.
We put it together in different and exciting combinations.
I think you bottle it up, Case, because in casual conversation, you drop the F word a lot.
A lot, right?
And you'll use it 2 or 3 times in a sentence.
That's it? Five or six times.
Okay, all right. But like you'll use it as an adjective and a verb and a noun.
We had a swear jar we'd have to put money in if we didn't swear.
Right? I'm going to go to some callers. Let me go to Allie. Hi, Allie. Good morning.
Thanks.
Hey, what's happening, Allie? Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to comment. I curse like a truck driver, and my boyfriend originally came from Oregon, and he never used any swear words until he's met me.
So you've corrupted him.
Absolutely.
Was he brought up in a household where cursing was just nobody did it?
Well, I don't really think so because they're all Irish.
Yeah, Irish, they don't curse at all. I'm Irish. We don't.
No.
Curse at
all. We're Italian, so all we do is use swear words.
Yeah, but some of the Italian swear words are very lyrical and don't even sound like.
Right.
You know? Is that a pasta selection, or are you telling me to stick my head on my ass?
I like the Irish version of the F word, which is, if you're writing it down, it's F-E-K.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that.
I said it one time on the air.
I love that pronunciation of that. Yeah,
did. And we still dumped out on it, because there are some things we could get away with, but they also could be mistaken.
Let me go to Jonathan, who's on the air. John, good morning.
Good morning, guys. You guys rock.
Thank you, my man. What's going on, buddy?
I just want you guys to know, first off, I'm Italian, and my dad doesn't like to curse in front of me, and I'm 31. I still rarely hear it, but the first time he cursed in front of me, I was 17 years old, and I won't forget it. It was during football.
Okay.
And he was very mad, and he dropped the F-bomb, and he turned and looked at me like he had just broken something that was so very expensive.
Ah.
And then my mom cursed in front of me, dropped the S-bomb, but I was 19, and same exact face, and I didn't know what to do. Because the first time that happens, you're shocked. I don't know if you guys understand because, you know, you guys are talking about how you're...
Well, am I reading it correctly, Jonathan, that at that moment they both felt they had sort of taken a bit of your innocence away?
That's what I imagine, yeah. I mean, they still rarely curse in front of me. I mean, it's just something that we don't do because they always told me you don't need to curse when you're having a conversation.
But, Jonathan, you were 17 and 19 at the time. You had heard these words many times over and over by the time your parents said it.
Many times, but never in my house.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
thanks, man.
It's weird because they are, what does SpongeBob call them? They're...
sentence enhancers.
Sentence enhancers.
That's what Patrick said, yeah.
One of the funniest SpongeBob episodes ever.
You get yourself a spicy sentence sandwich. I love that one, Steve.
Sentence enhancers.
I love it.
Okay, so you curse in front of your parents?
No. Well...
Do they curse in front of you?
My mom has never, I don't think, ever said the F word. She surely has never said it in front of me.
Right.
My dad, growing up, he said the F word in front of me one
time.
Does
she say it on her adult movie blog?
No.
Your mom has...
Careful. My mom.
Yes, of course.
No. My dad said it in front of me once when I was probably about 13. My mom had back surgery. She was in a body cast for months. And I was being an a-hole, and so, you know, he had finally reached the tipping point, and he said, you know, like, stop this effing S or something like that.
Right.
We're like, whoa.
Yeah. So I deserve that one, but my dad has relaxed just a little bit. My dad's a truck driver, so.
But he's also a deacon, right?
Yeah.
There was one time I told basically my whole family, except for my dad, because I wouldn't have survived. I told them all to F off.
Oh. It was,
except you, Dad.
I was 18 years old. He wasn't there. Okay. It was my mom and my sister and my aunt, and I forgot who else was there.
Wow.
But we're sitting at a table. We're in Las Vegas, of all places. And my aunt was just, they were just bitching and complaining about this and that and these people, and they're driving me nuts and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just hearing this complaining over and over. And I just I just go, you know what? You guys can just all F off. And it was like everybody
was
wide eyes. And they were like, what did you just say?
How old were you?
I'm like, you heard me. I was 18.
Okay. So you were of an age.
Yeah, but I hadn't
I never
dropped the F bomb, you know, pointed at anybody like that before.
Well, I was 20, 21 when my mom passed away. But prior to that, and my dad, there'd be no way. I could use the word around them, but I couldn't say F off.
Right.
Yeah. That was a line that could not be crossed. Not to your parents.
I remember my father-in-law. He's a really, really cool guy. We were we just bought our house. We redid the kitchen. We tore it apart. And it was like one of those things. It was me and my father-in-law. It was bonding time. Yeah. We were building a kitchen together, you know?
You want a massage?
Yeah. I was very tense, you know?
Want to do right by him, yeah.
No, but something happened. He goes, you know, the effing thing. And I was like, yeah, man, like effing thing, yeah. Right? Just those guys that just said the F word in front of my father-in-law.
Would you like a beer? Yeah, no, I know. You're trying to bond with him. And sometimes that's a way to do it.
Right, I'm not going to read that.
Oh, come on, read it.
Okay. All right. You asked for it. It says Casey doesn't curse in front of his kids, but have they ever walked in on you spanking him?
No.
I told you I locked the door. Read it.
But you said the lock is broken.
No. I don't have a lock on my bathroom door.
Okay.
But I don't do it in my bathroom.
No.
No, I do it in my daughter's
bedroom. In your foyer. Yeah. I do it in my son's race car bed.
No.
Let me go to Luke. Hey, Luke, you're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, what's up, guys? You guys rap.
Rock and roll!
Yeah, so growing up, my bad, I almost just caused an accident.
You all right?
Are you okay?
Yeah, we're good.
Come on, keep driving.
Get out and exchange information.
My mom we call her the church lady. She's very religious. She goes to church every single day. Mm-hmm. Very strict. And we used to get in trouble if we said shut up. Like, we used to have to clean the whole kitchen. That would be the punishment.
Shut up's bad.
Mm-hmm. However, he would have my father, if the batteries on the remote didn't work, he would drop the F-bomb like it was going out of style.
Yeah. And Luke, that is the ultimate. That is the same situation I had. My mother rarely used sentence enhancers, but my dad was all over the place. And it was just a weird dichotomy that, you know, you had on one end, that language and you know, sweetness and niceness coming from the mom. I bet you that's the dynamic in a lot of homes.
It is funny. And I'm from a big family. I have 11 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
So growing up, it's funny. Like, we all used to, you know, we used to go through that phase to where we had to, like, sneak saying shut up. But then it got to the point to where we're just walking around the house just dropping the F-bomb. You know, like, it's not something to brag about. It's kind of bad, but
you know,
I guess my dad kind of won that battle.
Were you able to say that you hated somebody?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So shut up, stupid. You couldn't say something sucked, right?
No way. Okay. We would get soap in her mouth for that.
Because we've said this before. Sucked is a contraction of a fuller phrase.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know the origin of it. I just used. I thought it meant like, oh, that stinks. You know, that's terrible. Like,
it does mean that now.
It does. Well, I know, but when I would say it, oh, that sucks. I didn't understand why my parents were upset at me for using that phrase.
Right. Yeah.
Because of its origin.
Sucks D.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And let's go to the wrestling thing. You know, suck it. That became a popular phrase amongst kids. What are we talking about sucking on here?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty. You know,
haven't we used like as a stupid question, or maybe Steve, you brought it up one time that when the first time suck was used on TV.
Yes, we did bring them. I don't think it was me. I think you might have brought it up, Preston. It's a stupid question.
It's like an All in the Family maybe or something. I don't know. But
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was maybe it was SNL.
You suck my and shut the up, huh?
Hang on, let me go to Greg. Went to Catholic school. Casey, you'll be able to identify with this. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Hey, good, Preston. What's going on? You guys rock.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. What's your story, bud?
So, I was raised in a Catholic family. I went to grade school in Lansdale. And when I was in eighth grade, we were in the lunchroom one time. And the bell rang. It had to be all quiet before we went out to recess. And I just let one rip in the back corner of the cafeteria. And my whole table just started laughing. So we got called up. And our teacher, the lunch lady, you know, let everyone else out back. She asked me what happened. I was the one that admitted it. And I said, you know, Miss So-and-so, I farted. and I said the F word, and she looked at me like I said something extremely awful, and I had no idea what I was really saying. And she was just like, have you not heard a more appropriate way of saying the word fart? Like, you should not have said that. And I ended up getting a 10-point demerit.
Wow. You got demerits in detention for saying fart?
After that day.
By the way, fart is TV friendly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fart's complete. I mean,
this is 8th grade.
Wow.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
I got demerits for asking, and I was a sophomore in high school. Granted, I probably could have just asked for a tissue, but I asked for a snot rag. And
you got demerits?
And I got demerits for that.
Yeah. Snot rag.
I mean, snot, would snot be inappropriate in school? Mm-hmm. When you were in Catholic school, Case, would snot, I mean, did snot rag, was the combination, or just saying snot?
I don't know. I guess maybe probably it just snot. Sounded a little inappropriate.
Aggressive. Yeah.
I don't know. I probably could have just asked for a Kleenex or a tissue, but.
There are better words for that. Other than snot. Now I'm going to put my foot up your ass if you ever say it again.
In Espanol, because it was Spanish.
How was it? How would you say this girl's name? Sari? Cherry?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Is your name Sherry?
Terry.
Oh, Terry.
Terry. Hey.
The T is silent and not written.
Gotcha. All right. Terry, what's going on?
You guys rock.
Oh, hey,
appreciate it.
Good roll.
Okay, so I was brought up in a house. We weren't allowed to say shut up. God forbid we ever said fart. No. We weren't allowed to say stupid. We didn't hate anything. So I brought my kids up kind of like that, but more liberal. But one day, this was only last month, my 23-year-old came into my room and said, the C word.
Oh,
wow. Whoa. Wait. Before you continue, a boy or girl?
A girl.
And did she call you a C word?
No, she called my other daughter, and I found out.
Okay.
She called it to her in a text, and my older daughter told me that she said it. And I said to my younger daughter, I heard you used the C word. And she said, oh, Mom, come on, get with it. Everybody uses a C word now.
No,
and walked away from me and shut her bedroom door because she knew I was coming after her. And I kicked down her door.
Wow.
With one karate shot, like one kick.
Yeah.
And I'm like 5'4".
Well, how young is the younger daughter? You said the older daughter's 23.
The older daughter's 26. And she actually told on the younger daughter.
Oh, what a sick.
Wait, how old's the younger daughter?
23.
These are adults
that are telling her.
What are the idiots? I mean, you know, mommy.
I'm sorry, but she is.
What did she have to leave her family at home to come over and tell you?
They're
26 and 23. Mommy,
and you're kicking the door down, Terry?
Yeah, Dad, this is Steve in Philadelphia. Prison called me a duty yet.
Hey, oh my she God. Lives in her mom's house and her mom doesn't want that word being used, yeah. Those are the
my
rules.
I was psycho.
But via text?
No, I don't mind. She has every right to have them not use the language, but the fact that a 26-year-old tattles on a 23-year-old is insane.
She didn't really tattle. It was like a big thing. But I just went, like, as soon as she said the word to me out loud, I was like, something went through my body. And
I'm going to tell on you, and Mom's going to keep all your pension checks.
That is a world stopper, though, man. When you that's
thanks, Terry.
See, that C word is the nuclear. It's DEFCON 4 right now. It goes past the F word.
More, yeah, absolutely. It's worse than the F word.
Don't you think, Preston?
Oh yeah,
C word trumps F word easily.
It's a pretty great little secret. You know,
it's a bomb.
It's your trump card,
right?
Yeah.
Especially if a girl like out of nowhere. I remember a situation. A girl called me an a-hole or something. It was like a driving thing, almost road rage or something along those lines. And I called her an F and C.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I'm whipping this out right now. This is the time.
You take it out like,
dust this off.
Want to make sure this works. Completely working.
All right, Marissa just brought this in. First time the word suck was said on television was a 1980s TV version of Uncle Buck.
It wasn't Dan Rather.
They made a TV show. It was not Dan Rather.
Tonight's headline story sucks. Sucks the big one. The big hairy one you might find on a large man. A utility worker. They're big and strong.
Where are you going with this, Dan?
A personal fetish. So, Uncle Buck.
Let me go to a couple other calls here. These are good. I'm going to go to Taylor. Hi, Taylor. Good morning.
Hi.
Hey.
Dad Zeus.
Dad Zeus, buddy. What's happening?
Nothing. When I was younger, my parents did, like, they threw around the F-bomb, everything, all the time.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. So when I was, like, 14, 15, a buddy of mine was planning to spend the night.
Yep.
And I didn't do dishes or something, and my mom goes, oh, F you, Taylor. And I'm like, F you too, Mom. Oh. And she goes, I love you. And I'm like, I love you too. And, like, my buddy's, like, standing in the stairs, like, oh, crap, should I leave? Oh, I don't know what to do. Like, scared. Like there was, like, he turned white, and he's like, oh, God, what should I do?
So, Taylor, you could freely use that word amongst your family?
Yep.
Wow.
It's funny because Randy Kostanowicz, when I was growing up, my neighbor and friend, he had that kind of... He and his sister had that, they could curse with their parents that way. Oh. And it was a case where the parents really tried to be more, what do they call them? Friends or.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Their parent friends.
They're trying to be buddies, yeah.
Which I think is a big mistake.
If it's too much, yes, I agree.
And I'd be there, and I knew all the curses, and I was using them liberally, but in that environment, I felt uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know what? My friend would say to his mom all the time, I hate you. You know, like, just when he didn't get what he wanted or whatever. Yeah, I hate
what was
you,
he,
Mom.
28 at the time?
No, he was like
25-year-old rat him out.
11, 12, somewhere around there. And so I kept hearing him say this, and I said that in front of my mom once. I was like, I hate you, Mom. And it was like everything stopped, and I really hurt her feelings. And it was like, oh, man, you know, and I couldn't, you know. So I only said that one time.
I've seen a couple of kids, mm-hmm. you know, that have said that at functions that we've been at. And I'm like, you know, my wife look at it and we look at each other and just go, ain't no way that would fly in our household.
No, nobody got time for that.
No way.
Well, and Casey, you remember the time that it happened with you. But like for that kid, for the other kid, it was like commonplace, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't even registered.
Yeah. If you're just throwing them off, no problem. Right. That's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Anyway, got to have respect for the parents.
One last call, because this guy's been on hold for a while. I'm going to Joe here. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Doing well.
Good. What's up, buddy?
I grew up in an Italian household, and the only curse words were in Italian, so I didn't really understand them. But I told my mom to shut up once, and can I just tell you what she did to me? She'd probably be arrested for it. She put a hot iron on my arm.
Oh, my God, Joe, that's abuse.
Jesus.
It was the last time I said it. I'm 35 years old, and I just said it right now to you guys. It was the last time I said it. First time I said it.
Joe,
it was the last time I said it to my mom.
Was there a lingering, do you still have a scar from that?
No, it wasn't like, it was just like real quick thing. I ran upstairs, cried my eyes out, and sat in my room underneath my bed and waited for my dad to come home from work, and then got my, you know, tail whoop when he got home.
Yeah, I love how it's written on our call screener here. He goes, I told my mom to shut up once.
Yeah. Johnny Dangerously.
Uh-huh. That's wow, Joe.
Once.
It was once, and it was the last time I ever did it, and she doesn't remember. I bring it up all the time.
Really?
I bring it up to my daughter, who's 12, and she'll tell me once in a while, you know, shut up, this and that. I'll yell at her, and I can't really do what she did to me, but
I mean, there's,
I thought, you know what Norma did? I was like, she put a hot iron on my arm. I was like, that's what we got, you know, and she doesn't believe me. And I was like, ask her. So she called her. I didn't do that. Your father's lying. And this and I was like,
wow. Because, yeah, I mean, something like that you can use down the road, you know, with the as you're an adult. What are you going to do, Mom? Burn me again with the iron? You know?
Sure.
That's not the only time. She left me on this, you know, she put me on a Frankfurt L by myself, you know, on the train.
She was trying to kill you, my friend.
Yes, yeah. Joe. Your mother was trying to kill you.
Did she ever mention an insurance policy or something? My mother, the most my mother did was punch me in the stomach.
Well, you did ruin a lot of meat.
I ruined $400 worth of meat in the freezer.
Right, the freezer. You unplugged the freezer.
I needed to plug in my wood-burning kit.
Uh-huh.
But it was so, because she's like 106 pounds,
right.
You know, and I'm a gorilla, and she punched me in the stomach. Like, it didn't even really feel it, but you hear me?
But you know what? That guy who just called in, his mom, she remembers. She does. She doesn't want to remember. She probably regrets the hell out of that.
Interesting. All right. Well, anyhow, it was just, we got started on this. The Toronto mayor dropped the S-bomb in front of a bunch of kids, and he's done a bunch of other terrible things. But anyhow.
Expect more from that guy.
Yes. We're going to take a break. Stay tuned.
Not only can you
you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
How you guys doing?
Doing well. Did you have any difficulty waking up this morning?
No, not really. Yeah. I actually, the last 2 days, I got up kind of early. I did the very early morning golf thing. You'd mentioned Matt O'Donnell earlier, Nick. He and I got up and played at 6 o'clock in the morning yesterday, so...
Yeah. What's his weekend like? Does he ever sleep in?
I don't know. He gets up at, you know, before we do, like 3 a.m. or something like that.
Just reckless debauchery.
Surprisingly, I didn't have trouble going to sleep last night, and I usually do. I went right to bed, didn't have a problem going to bed or getting up this morning. After a week long.
It sucks to adjust and all that stuff because it's. You know, I tend to be a late night person, and then sometimes I'm just staying up late just because I can. And I'm like, I just go to bed already. Dude,
Kathy, you sent a text message at one point during the week. It was like 11:30 at night. And I just laughed the next morning because I was up at like 6 o'clock every day during vacation because I had to take the puppy out to go to the bathroom and stuff.
Oh, that's when I was out with Belaris.
You were taking Belaris out to go to the
but
bathroom.
But I just was laughing because, I mean, there wasn't a night during my vacation that I wasn't asleep well before 11 o'clock.
There you go.
Yeah, you're still tired.
You're in the zone, yeah.
I know what you mean. Preston, you said you got up early because you did the early morning golf. Mm-hmm. I start my golf lessons this week.
Yes, Kathy is going to begin playing golf. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, she's been very vocal about wanting to learn golf. So that's very cool. What day you start?
Thursday.
Okay.
We're going to play in a pro-am tournament in September, so she's got to get ready for that.
I got my new clubs.
We should dress her up in classic old-style golf gear, Preston.
Yeah.
The full, you know, the whole so the Bagger Vance look.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Cool. No. I want to see Kathy in sexy women's golf attire. Because there's a fashion to it, and the ladies that wear it right look awesome. Like Sheena Parveen. I played golf with her
about
a month ago or so. She looked fantastic. You're going to look great.
What did she have on? I think you told us, but I forget.
It was a thong and a halter top.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With pasties.
Classic golf attire.
No, generally the ladies will wear a baseball hat.
Did she have a skirt or a pants or capris?
Yeah.
Skirt?
Okay. Yeah, that was very, very nice. Mm-hmm. Right, so anyhow, I'll bring pictures of Kathy in her golf attire. We're getting back into the swing of things, and it's always interesting to kind of restart after you've been off in a different mindset for a week or more.
And it seems like last week was a big week for vacations. It just seemed a lot of people were off.
Yeah,
you know?
I ran into a lot of people who were taking some time.
Yeah.
I start off with my vacation started off terrible.
What happened?
I wasn't having a good time. We didn't really go anything or do anything.
You did the staycation too.
Yeah, we didn't go anywhere or do anything. And I just, I had been playing awesome golf and I started off the week by playing the two worst rounds of golf I've played in more than 5 years. And then I got a migraine and then I lost a bunch of money gambling. You know, it's a casino. I've got the week off. I'm going to go gamble, man. I'm going to have a good time. I just handed all my money back to the casino.
And a hooker cut you?
And a hooker cut me.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, this is it.
It's it. What's wrong?
But it ended up being nice towards the end, and then the weather cooperated and all that, so we're back.
Was the weather nice up here? Or here?
Yeah, Casey, you were gone.
I was gone.
Rhode Island. Yeah, it was all right. I mean, New Hampshire. Yeah, it was okay. It was decent.
It was all right.
Yeah.
Nothing to write home about.
Okay.
Which you could have, because you were away.
Yeah.
Was it nice where you were? I was leading in.
Oh, I didn't know. Well, it was awesome where I was.
Yeah,
it was awesome. A lot of sick. All right, listen. It was beautiful where I was. We went to Vermont the first night, camped in this campground. I think it rained. It rained for about 45 minutes in the morning on Saturday. And then we drove to New Hampshire, and it was gorgeous all week long.
Lake Winnipesaukee,
which, you know what, I found out I was every day I got up early and I was having my morning coffee and I tweeted out stuff and I sent out my favorite scenes from What About Bob.
Yeah.
And then on Friday I found out that What About Bob although it was set in Lake Winnipesaukee area, was filmed in Virginia.
Really?
I was so
Those
pissed.
Lying bastards.
I was so mad. But, you know, so
well, was this lake up, at least up to your standards?
Oh, my gosh. It was so beautiful. And I found out that, like, the lake sort of, and I'll misspeak here, it, like, replenishes itself, like, every 4 to 5 years.
With chocolate milk.
With chocolate milk. Now, it's spring-fed in certain areas. It was so clean.
Oh, really? I liked it. Could you see down to the bottom?
I could see down to the bottom for, you know, we all right, so the house we stayed at was actually a dump. All right. I didn't care.
You said like a dump, please?
I didn't care. I just wanted a house on the lake.
What made it a dump?
Wait, did you know what you were
I knew what
walking
I was,
into?
Well,
kind of?
I had an idea that I knew it wasn't gonna be
because it
nice.
Was in the dump section?
No.
Did your wife know?
I was very limited in
So no.
All right, so the weeks leading up to it, like, I would come home, and she'd be like, hey, you know this place doesn't have a washer and dryer, right? I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
We can get a laundry service.
You'll love
it. Yeah. So, you know, with the kids swimming in the lake, she would obviously want to do some laundry so the kids aren't wearing dirty clothes or whatever. I didn't care, you know?
When you got there, did you find a book bound in human flesh?
No.
No, okay.
They did have an answering machine, though, which I was like, wow, I haven't seen one of these in a decade.
I remember about 2 months ago, we were talking about this upcoming vacation, and there was an option for you to upgrade.
Yeah.
And you considered it. You didn't go with that upgrade.
No, no. Okay.
You would have gotten a better answering machine.
I know. Steve, all right. So
And free beeper service.
I come home another day, and my wife's like, all right, so you know this place doesn't have air conditioning. I'm like, yeah, I know. and that's fine.
No.
We're in. No, it's New Hampshire in August. You know, it was nice and cool, very low humidity. We get to the house, and I mean, there's just this beautiful, huge lake behind us. You know, you go into the kitchen.
At least that was there.
Yeah. So you get into this kitchen, which, you know, was rustic.
Rustic or rusted?
Both.
Yeah.
You get into this kitchen, and you look out the window, and there's this beautiful lake behind you, and you barely even notice that one of the chairs in the living room adjoining this kitchen was decorated with a bed sheet. Huh? You know, like,
oh,
so I was like afraid to even look. I'm like, why would
that's, wait a second.
That's what they put over this thing to just get a new chair, you know, like, I don't know.
So are
know.
You
I,
distracting Diane going, look at this beautiful view. Oh, my gosh, that is so gorgeous.
As he gently pushes the dead rat off the counter.
I didn't even want to look to see what was underneath the bed sheet, you know, but they put a fitted bed sheet on this chair to cover up whatever was underneath. Yeah. Instead of just going out and spending we're driving on these country roads and they had all these antique shops where you could have just invested maybe $50 of the $2,000 I spent on this house. To, like, buy a new chair or something. But I didn't care.
Well, maybe
that
specially decorated.
Sounds like you do care.
Yeah.
I know. I thought it was funny.
I didn't care, though.
I didn't care. All right. Do you guys see this picture? That was my view every single
night. It's a beautiful,
night.
Rustic, on Golden Pond shot of a lake.
Sunset looks gorgeous.
From the dump.
Never once did you turn the camera around the house, right?
All right, no. And then they
had
a basement.
$2,000 for the week?
What's that?
$2,000 for the week. Okay.
That's actually pretty reasonable for I mean, if you got everything there, you're paying for, obviously, location.
Yeah.
What would you pay for a beach house?
More than that.
Yeah, $2,600, something like that.
Yeah.
And just a quick aside, like, you could spend, I mean, it's almost $400 a night, so you could spend that in a really nice hotel for a week.
Yes.
Which is what you like to do.
Or buy a chair.
Or buy a chair.
Buy a chair.
For $400, get a really nice chair.
I was convinced that I think of the whole show, I would probably be the only one who would stay at this place. I think, Kathy, if you walked in, you would have gone, no,
I would have left.
No. Dennis, why didn't you tell me about this? You would have gone and stayed in a hotel or driven to New York or anywhere. But I was surprised that my wife stuck it out, but by Friday she was ready to go.
She wanted to kill you.
She was getting itchy.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's because of the sheets.
Yeah.
The bed bugs.
The bed bugs, I'm getting itchy to leave. Oh, because you want to get home? No, because I'm infested.
I've rented a crappy house with my family in the past when I was growing up. In New England as well, Case. And Steve, to your point of spend the extra money on a hotel or wherever you're going to stay, because
even if you're not going to spend a lot of time in that domicile for the week, it just it makes it that much
better.
We
don't get, you know, we get two long vacations a year, and if you're going to do it, you might as well hedge your bets.
It's difficult finding a place sight unseen, though. I mean,
it is.
Sure. I mean, at least now, internet-wise, you get a pretty decent idea. If there are enough pictures, I feel fairly confident. But if there are only one or two photos, I'm like, no, I'm not going to risk it.
What if there's no photo of the answering machine?
Then I'm out, dude.
You want to make sure that
forget it.
It's got to be a dictaphone or nothing.
We did have cable TV on TVs that were smaller than any monitor we have in here, and they were tubes.
They were tube TVs
yeah. or whatever, but I read a lot.
Was the cable just to keep it from falling off the stand?
Basically.
We reserved a flea bag one time, unbeknownst to us. It was me and, at the time, my sister and I were traveling in Los Angeles, and my girlfriend was along, too, and we were going to go down to Mexico, to Rosarito.
Oh, I've been there.
And we had a friend suggest a hotel. Oh, it's great. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Real nice, real quaint.
Thank you, friend.
We show up, and we go into the room, and my girlfriend and my sister both look at me and go, we are not staying here. There's no way we're staying here. And we had to haggle to get out of this whole thing, wow. And then we had to scramble and find a hotel room somewhere.
How bad was it?
I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I thought it was run down. It wasn't nice. It was... you know, but they were having none of
this
it.
This is the presidential suite.
Yeah, so I mean, it's you know, and
this
I
is where
do,
the president died.
When we do vacations, I do most of the research for myself. I don't go to a travel agent. I like to, for some reason, I find it kind of fun.
Yeah,
it's an adventure to go through and find everything that you want to with the amenities you want and booking it. I like doing it myself.
Upholstered with bed sheets, answering machine. It's got it all.
So I dig around a lot.
No, I'm the same way, Press. I don't have a travel agent, although you guys have recommended yours, Steve and Kathy. I'm going to try him sometime. I remember my dad would go through like the AAA catalog back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And book stuff that way. And it was often hit or miss.
It could be, but still, you know, if a free spirit, you want to go for it, Casey, you went for it. You know, one time we were upstate New York and my brother-in-law who'd, you know, we were staying at this one hotel, and we could only get that for 2 days. So he booked us into another hotel. We're up visiting family, a family function. And he books us into this place. And I kid you not, I walk in, and there's one small, like, kid's bed. And then on the other side of the room is a bunk bed. I mean, we have no kids.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is an adult's room with bunk beds. Yeah. Like, what the
I get to be on the top.
And you checked in. The reception desk was the bar in the restaurant.
Oh, wow.
The bartender did all the... It was unbelievable.
That was the shower.
I'm sure I got vitiligo from that hotel.
You know, listen, all right, so we brought our puppy with us. So our you know, choices were very limited. So we had to stay at a pet-friendly place. And you could see why this place was pet-friendly.
Yeah,
because
you can piss all over the house. Nobody will notice.
In fact, there are a few dead pets under the counter.
Yeah.
Take a pet.
There were definitely...
There's a bin full of pets by the front door.
You know, we walked in and there was like a stain on the kitchen floor. I was like, that's not ours. You know, didn't do that or whatever. All right, so it was pet friendly, but also...
Was someone there to show you around?
No.
And in here is your conservatory.
This room
like
is...
I come in here and reflect.
Our studio is bigger than the whole... house, okay. You know, but I really didn't care, you know. I think it is funny, but
would
I
also you stay there again?
I would
in that house.
No. In that house.
What? Would your wife?
I think he's convinced himself.
Yeah, you would not stay there again.
And down here, if you like to work on making clothing out of human skin, it's a perfect room for.
Well,
at least I found
the basement's another story. they did have a basement, and you know, it was a little walkout. I walked down there. And
there's an old woman in a rocking chair sitting away from you.
You spin her around.
Hello.
I would never go down there at night. I was immediately transported when I walked down to the basement because that's where the trash was and everything. And you know, there are no trash cans outside because of bears and stuff like that. But when I walked to the bottom of the basement, I was immediately transported to a nightmare that I had about being in a haunted house. Like, this place,
good God.
Wow.
Scary,
sounds
man.
Sounds awesome.
And, right. Yeah. And it smelled weird. But I was like, oh my gosh, like I don't feel like I want to be down here all by myself.
It smelled weird.
I'm the man of the house.
Why didn't you have the kids go down first?
Well, I was like, absolutely not. You guys are not allowed down here whatsoever. The, you know, the stairs are really steep and musty.
Musty stairs are the worst.
Okay, I'm sorry. My wife is texting me now because she's listening.
When did she say I'll never
stay
there?
Do you want to get her on the phone?
She says, the truth comes out. You forgot to mention we needed a dog-friendly house. No, I mentioned that. That was our only option. You know what? I would like to get her honest opinion on this place. Just
call
because,
her. Let's get her on the line. Okay. Because I have a feeling she was being a wonderful wife.
She was great.
Yes.
She was great.
She was really good. We should be divorced right now, and she stuck it out.
There were a few years. I mean, my mom's a shore person, and my dad is a mountain person. So we would have that debate every year, and we would do Jersey Shore all.
You'd compromise and vacation in the suburbs.
No, but for the first, most of my growing up, it was Jersey Shore. But then my dad started getting his way, so we would do New England. We did Winnipesaukee a few years, Casey, and it is. It's beautiful, and you can look the other way on some things. But there were summers where my mom hated my dad and wanted to murder him because he would book a place like this and the floors would be slanted and there'd be leaks. You know,
listen, I understand if you're just gonna screw around and you know, what the hell? But when you're bringing your family, I think you want a.
Well, that's why, you know, we started looking at it. Even, you know, everybody rents or the large portion of people rent beach houses. And I've looked into it a little bit. And I'm always, I never know what to, what's going to be good and what's not going to be good.
Is the mindset, because
you just got to go and
because you're thinking,
it.
Well, we're not going to be in the house that much.
Yeah.
Is that what most people think when they go to, like, for, because I've never rented a beach house.
I think that's what people think. I think you're exactly right.
So we're not going to be in
it
a lot.
We're not going to be there that much. But, I mean, You know the way you like to travel and how you like to stay. And for me, and I know you too, Steve, Casey pointed out me, but Steve as well, it doesn't have to be, you know, the greatest place
not
on earth.
Not at all.
But
not at all.
I would not enjoy myself if I stayed where you stayed, Casey.
I want it clean, and I want a couple of the amenities, like an up-to-date answering machine. Like bed sheets on the bed.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, listen.
And a basement that doesn't scare me.
We got really, really lucky with the weather. So we were outside. Quite a bit.
So you weren't even in there.
No. And that was the whole idea.
The bears were inside.
That was the whole idea. It was that we were going to be outside enjoying the lake or nature or whatever.
Right.
And I will say, it rained on Friday.
The
all day.
Loons, Casey. Listen to the loons, Casey.
I listened to the loons, and we were right near the loon center. It was pretty cool.
It's the loon center. Attention, the loons have returned to the loon center.
Crazy.
That was like the
crazy old bitch.
There were like three attractions, you know, in this whole area. One of them was Castle in the Clouds. That was the number one attraction.
Yeah. What is Castle in the Clouds?
It's
a ladder.
This guy. Oh, no. It was gorgeous. There's this, this
mountain. It's a ladder to a treehouse.
Here, if you guys, never mind. There's this giant house that this guy built that's, you know, set upon this hill that looks all over, you know, Moultonboro and Wolfboro and Lake Winnipesaukee and the whole area. Right. And so this guy builds this house. He wanted it to look like a castle, so they call it a Castle in the Clouds.
Okay.
And now it's a tourist destination. That's number one. Number two is the Loon Center, which we never made it to.
God damn it.
I know.
And you had the tickets and everything.
Yeah.
You had to sell them online.
What's number three?
Who likes loons? Anybody like loons? I think it's at the Loon Center.
Number three was the Ridgewood Country Club.
Oh, I've heard good things.
I don't know anything about that. But listen,
they just started accepting African Americans there. It's awesome.
We got the most beautiful weather. It rained on Friday. We were going to leave Friday night anyway, just because we weren't leaving with everybody on Saturday. But that was the one day where my wife was sort of like stuck in the house. She was ready to go. Like, I took the kids bowling, you know, because the one movie theater, which was about as big as this room, was sold out. So I got a text message from her saying, get here, get home now. I'm ready to go. Let's go.
But otherwise, you toughed it out, and it was good, and you had a great... You said this morning you had a fantastic time.
It was amazing. I didn't want to leave, but eventually when we got on
Eventually the mildew gets to you.
When we got on the road, I couldn't wait to get home, but I really didn't want to leave. We drove to Mount Washington Which is like the highest peak in northeastern United States.
And yeah, this, did you get a sticker that says this car climbed Mount Washington?
We did.
Oh, it comes with it.
Well, I bought a magnet because I wanted to put a sticker on the car.
Yeah, I understand.
So I bought a magnet that says it. But
my car and my newly acquired bed bugs.
I'll tell you, the first person I texted when we got to the base of Mount Washington was Nick, because when we got, you drive up to this summit, right? And it's an 8 mile drive up to the summit, and then you get out of the car, and then you have to walk the rest. I started bugging out, like I couldn't breathe.
Because of the altitude,
and we had the dog with us and everything, which is probably a bad idea.
Did you ride the dog?
No, he's barking at everybody because he's probably freaking out because he can't breathe, right? So the dog is like, and it's like cloudy, you know, because you're in the clouds. And the dog's like, rawr, 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 barking at everybody. And I now I'm carrying him to the summit and he's barking at everybody. And I'm freaking out because I can't breathe. I'm like, oh God, I think I might have a heart attack. You know, and then I look at my wife and she's like, you know, we got to get this.
Don't look at me!
I was bugging the F out. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't breathe. I feel like I might have a heart attack.
Sounds like a great time.
It does.
Up until that.
The fear of death, the fear of your basement, an answer machine.
Smell of must.
Smell of, mildew.
Yeah.
You talk about the fear of death when you're driving up this auto road. They don't have guardrails, all right? And it's like straight off a cliff. And the road barely fits two cars, you know? I'm like, hey, how about you just invest a couple of bucks into a guardrail? Or maybe...
Take some chair money.
Into, like, maybe some more asphalt. Right. Maybe 3 or 4 more feet of asphalt on this road that somebody dies on every single year driving up to the top of Mount Washington.
Is there a slight chance some of this has been bottling up inside for a couple of days?
By the way, I'm not mad. Like, I loved it.
I loved it! I recommend Lake Winnipesaukee for the vacation of your life. Who wouldn't love it? State-of-the-art answering machine, bed sheets on the chairs, and a scary basement. I haven't stopped scratching.
You can do a railway up Mount Washington.
Can do that.
Yeah, the Cog Railway. I've done that a few times. It's and that's at like what, 6,000 feet, 6,100?
That way your dog can breathe.
Yeah.
No, like 8,000 feet or whatever.
No, it's not.
That's what I thought I read.
No, you read wrong.
No, I actually did.
Nick is our mountaineer. He would know.
I didn't read it. My wife read it. That's what I thought she had read.
Kilimanjaro.
Yeah. But but I did on the way back. I saw so many people with the passenger of the car like covering their eyes because it's, you know, you're literally just on the side of this cliff, and if you go off, you're done. That's it.
Well, they never do like the Pacific Coast Highway because that'll scare the crap out of
you. Oh yeah,
as well.
That is scary.
Jackson was telling me about this place in Colorado that he drove, this auto road that he drove on. It was the same exact thing.
Yeah, he always tells that story.
I just planned a trip over while we were gone. I wasn't doing anything
during this break.
Yeah. Now, in 2 weeks, me and my son are going to go to Vail and spend some time there. Yeah,
you've been looking for something to do with your son.
Yes, we're going to go whitewater rafting and Jeep back road.
That's awesome.
Back roading.
But just so people know, you're going to leave a book of matches for your remaining son.
Of course, so he can play with, have something to do. But that, I think, is like, that's over 10,000 feet.
Yeah,
so.
Parts of it. I did that for a bachelor party a few years ago. Yeah. It was a bluegrass and beer festival. And
sounds right up my alley.
It was incredibly fun. And it is beautiful there. But there are passes where you can do mountain roads and whatever. And easily get up to 10.
Yeah, so I need to be ready for Casey's freaking out, breathing, and...
Bring as many dogs as you can.
So we carry them around.
We got down from the summit a little bit, and I went to take some pictures, and it was really, really windy. And I went
It's the windiest spot in the United States, is it not?
In the world,
the windiest conditions ever recorded.
We're at the top of Mount Washington.
So I decided to piss, not into the wind, but I just...
But on another tourist.
No, I went to this, like...
Cliff. Hey, where are you from?
Jersey.
Here, let me take a piss on you.
That's a piss. Well, Mount Washington tradition, dude. If your state's above mine, I have to piss on you.
I never heard that.
That's true. But, you know, my relations, so.
Wait a second. You got the cabin with the answering machine. I'm going to listen to you.
I jumped out of the van just to go take a couple of extra pictures, and I walked across this little area, and I went to this cliffside, and I was by myself, and I really had to pee, and I was like, okay, and all the wind was blowing in this one direction, so I was like, all right, I'm going
to pee.
I'm going to pee that way.
Yeah.
You know, so at the end, midstream, the wind...
It changed.
Changed. And just to say, he was like, F you, buddy. And like it all went in my face and on the camera lens. I was like, how the hell did that happen?
It went in your face? Wait, and the camera lens, were you taking a picture while you were peeing?
Well, I had the camera around my neck.
You gave yourself a golden shower.
Wow. I didn't tell anybody about that one.
Wow. You didn't tell the family about
that?
No. Guess what Daddy just did?
I just peed on myself. Just peed on my face.
Daddy, you have to pay for that.
Wow. All right. Well, I wasn't expecting to get that much out of you, but that's nice to know.
By the way, I loved it.
I had a great time.
What did I say before I left? Because with the camping and the crappy house, everything, there was this beautiful recipe for either disaster or just a wonderful family vacation, and I figured I would have a great story regardless.
Good. Right mindset. You set yourself up for to have a good time. But everyone else agreed?
The kids had a great time.
And Diane... Ultimately,
she was ready to get out of that house. Like I said, on Friday when it was raining and she was stuck in the house, she was ready to go.
Was it because a voice told her to leave?
No. The woman in the basement.
Leave the house.
When that was the other thing. Like the puppy had me up at like 3 in the morning to go to the bathroom a couple of nights.
I have to go to the bathroom.
You're dogging.
I got scared because of bears and, you know, whatever.
No, you can't, yeah.
I was like a little bit freaked out.
You did the right thing. You covered yourself in piss.
Yeah. Take that, Grizzly.
Next time, rub salmon all over your face.
Wow. By the way, Nick pulled up. Mount Washington is under 7,000 feet. It's 6,288. So that's the height.
At what point, when you were climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, did you notice
that you were dying?
That you were dying.
That you were slowly dying.
Well, I was thinking about Ray Lewis from, you know, of the Ravens. He couldn't climb all the way to the top of the mountain, and it's not because he's not in good shape, but like I guess the altitude affects people differently.
Yeah, no, I never got altitude sickness, but I was always short of breath, especially when you got up to the summit. So that was a year ago. And,
Kilimanjaro.
I'd love to do Mount Washington again. I don't think I'll ever do Mount Kilimanjaro again. But at about, I don't know, 10, Casey, I started losing my breath.
It's an amazing thing when you get up to those mountain altitudes, you don't know what to expect. But when you start to, when I've been up high in those altitudes, you get very thirsty. So they always tell you to bring loads of water.
This is going to be interesting when we go to Vail because they're now at the top. There are zip lines and a ropes course.
Yeah.
And we're going to try that out. I'll probably die.
What time of year are you going?
I'm going in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that'll still be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll still be comfortable. I mean, it may be a little bit on the cool side, but I'm looking forward to it. All right, well, anyway, Case, nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't think
you had fun.
I'll ever be allowed to book the house again.
But you'll go back to Winnipesaugh, right?
I would definitely go back there. Okay.
You always say this to me. I got to say it to you. I'm so glad I'm not married to you.
Nice. All right, well, listen, we do need to take a break and stay down.
Preston and Steve's Camp Out for Hunger begins Monday, November 16th at Xfinity Live inside the Wells Fargo Center complex. You heard correctly. The event is a little earlier than usual. This difficult year has made it even harder for area families staring food insecurity right in its face, which makes the Camp Out Business Challenge more important than ever. Props to Subaru of America for leading the way, challenging other area companies to get involved. It's effective team building for your staff as they rally together to help fill abundance in their mission to drive hunger from our communities today and end hunger for good. For those who go the extra mile, there are prizes for the top 3 business challenge donations, including Preston and Steve broadcasting live from your place and for your staff. Go to WMMR.com for complete details and a list of especially needed food items. Preston and Steve's Camp Out for Hunger from 93.3 WMMR, putting Philly first.
You know him, of course, from his solo work, like what we just played now, and the band Creed. Please give some love to Mr. Scott Stapp.
Yeah. What's up? What's up?
How you doing, Scott? Welcome.
I'm doing good, man. You guys woke me up too early, man.
I'm sorry.
It's the nature of a morning show.
We don't live the rock and roll hours, man.
That couch back there in the other studio is comfortable, though.
Were you really sleeping in there?
No.
Many people have.
Yeah.
Last night we thought about it. We actually came in here, you know, no one was here, it was empty, and I thought about sleeping on that couch. couch right there.
No, that couch sucks. That couch is the worst. It's like a Flintstones couch. It's made of rock. It's horrible.
You know what, Scott? I mean, the band Creed, who would have known when you guys first surfaced that all these offshoots would come out of this band? You know, there's a few different things. Obviously, Alter Bridge, and then there's A Perfect Circle, and then your solo work, and you guys float in and out with some other musicians, and Miles Kennedy has gone on to work with Slash, and it's kind of a cool little chain of events that what this band has created.
You know, I think life has a way of just making things the way they're supposed to be, man. And, you know, here today, you know, it's a big day for me. You know, my album's out today.
Well, I dug that, by the way. That's the first time we were able to hear it. That's
balls.
It does, yeah.
Thank you.
Is it why I was asking you? We were talking about hearing it on the air, hearing it through the audio chain of a radio station. Is when you hear a song of yours on the radio, do you still get a little bit of that initial, hey, man, that's cool?
You know what? I can honestly tell you today, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's a big day for me. You know, this album was a long time in the making, and it's like the start of a new chapter in my life and what the future holds, man. And I'm really excited about it.
That's cool. You know, and as Steve, to touch on a little bit about that, hearing it on the radio, when you when musicians are in the studio and they're recording and it's mixing, mm-hmm. and it's being put together and it's running through the absolute most exemplary equipment that's available,
right, yeah.
and it just sounds awesome. You don't hear it until you hear it on the radio, I think. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And this is like one of the first times
I've
had a chance to do that. So I'm sitting back and I'm thinking, did Chris Lord-Alge and I get this mix right?
Yeah.
Because the mix is so important to how it sounds through the radio. And he's amazing and he knows that. So I was pretty happy to hear it.
Good.
Man.
Do you remember what the first song of yours was that you heard on the radio? And do you remember where you were the first time you heard it?
Absolutely. It was My Own Prison. And I was in college at Florida State University.
Wow.
It was on a locals only show. And I'll never forget because me and Mark were sitting there and the DJ comes on and he goes, yeah, these two local guys, let's check out their music. They're probably sitting around the radio with a couple girls trying to impress them. And we look at the girls next to us and we're like smiling because that's exactly what we were doing. So.
And did it work? Did you impress them?
Yeah.
My two favorite songs that you have done are Higher. I just think it's a great song. And then I was really surprised by Rain. I just think that's a beautiful song. I don't know if you have a favorite or not, but those are my two.
Yeah, I definitely have some favorites over the years. I think from the single standpoint, you know, I think Sacrifice has always been a favorite of mine, and One Last Breath.
I was doing some, you know, some reading up on you, and here's, it's a classic story. I mean, you know, you hit a big streak of success. It seems the industry as a whole likes to say, hey, you're awesome. Now you suck. And now you're awesome again. You've been through that. And
from
your perspective, I mean, you're in a good place now.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look back at that ride, you know, and the way things went, what's your perspective on that now?
Well, I tell you, it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I wouldn't change anything for the world. You know, I feel so blessed and fortunate.
Did the down stuff yield? I mean, because sometimes I think a lot of times you got to go through that down stuff to get your proper, you know.
Absolutely, man.
Reference.
To grow.
Yeah.
You know, and to move forward as a human being. So without that, you know, how are you going to do that? And so for me as an artist, you know, without that period in my life, I'd never be sit here and talk about it because this record really sums up. With clarity, you know, the last 10 years of my life.
Well, and that track we played, Slow Suicide, seems to follow that theme.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the song represents and talks about just me reflecting on some things that, you know, I did and choices that I made in my life that I realized were slowly killing me, man.
Was alcohol was the demon?
Alcohol.
Yeah.
And the thing about this song is it doesn't have to be, you know, alcohol or drugs. It can be a relationship. It can be anything in your life that's robbing you of your happiness.
That's poison.
And your peace, man, you know?
Did you get to the point, I was reading, I don't know if this is correct, where you actually at one point holding a gun to your head and this is do or die time?
I thought about it. I was pretty wasted at that point. So I wasn't in my right mind. because, you know, I think about that sober and I'm like, man, I could never do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was at a pretty bad point. And thank God for a photograph of my son Jagger on the wall because it saved my life.
Yeah.
When you have moments like that and you look back on them, I would imagine putting them in lyrically and musically down has got to be therapeutic for you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it started, you know, this album would have never been born had I not written my book last year. Sinner's Creed, because really I was at a place where I hadn't processed it all, you know, and I really had lost myself and was really questioning everything.
You know, it's a funny thing, Scott, is, and it's something that you'll learn and I've learned, is that there's a lot to be said for stepping back and taking a breath.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in life you don't do that. Is that something you had to learn as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To be still.
Right.
You know, and
just absorb it.
Right. And that was tough for me. And to feel, you know, man, like to actually feel what's going on without numbing it.
Right, right.
Because it's so easy to do that and just keep moving forward. And when that happened, man, and I finally got some clarity to my life as a whole, this album was born.
Is it weird when you're taking something, as Preston was talking about, the personal aspect of a song about suicide, and does it then become very daunting because you want to do it right, you want to convey the message right, and you're trying to capture an emotion?
Yeah.
Or is it a case when something is that profound in your life that it just flows?
Well, it depends. Sometimes it just flows, and sometimes you just can't finish it. Like a song I've been working on for my daughter. Her name is Milan. And, you know, I wrote With Arms Wide Open for my first son, Jagger, before he was born. And I just can't seem to finish this song for my daughter. It's just never good enough.
Do you hold on to songs and go back to them like this? Is this something that eventually...
This song is going on 6 years.
Wow.
Of trying to write this song. And it's just never good enough. And
chicks, man.
You know what I mean? First it was her mother and now it's her. And I tell you what, I never understood how complex and wonderful and the depth that women had until I had my daughter.
Dude,
you know,
you were speaking my language.
Yeah, dude.
My third is a girl.
Yeah.
My wife had to talk me into going for round number three.
Yeah.
And now I look at her and I'm like, I love you so much. It hurts. I mean, it's just, I can't stand it. It's so awesome.
It is.
It's beyond incredible.
It's amazing.
It's made life worth living. So being here is now worth it. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's cool. Let's talk about some of the musicians now. Obviously, you and Mark Tamani have a great symbiotic relationship when it comes to writing music. Who are the guys that you brought on board for this?
Oh, man, I worked with a lot of cool people through this project. You know,
I saw Kenny Arnoff. He's one of my favorite drummers of all time.
Man, Kenny's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And he still looks 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, this can't be Kenny when he came in. You know, he's awesome. And Josh Fries.
Yeah. Great drummer.
The legend. Mm-hmm. Tim Pierce. He's played on over 1,000 rock records, man. And just from Michael Jackson to you know, doing backing tracks on Pink Floyd albums. Mm-hmm. Phil X, amazing guitar player. He's currently filling in for Sam Bohr right now.
Write with you, or?
Well, Phil did. Like,
okay.
For example, Phil and I wrote with Tyler Connelly from Theory of the Dead Man. We wrote Proof of Life.
Okay.
So some songs were and some songs were not.
How are you with criticism of you as a singer?
Man, you know what? I've had so much over the years.
You just become immune.
Hey, I'm human, bro.
Yeah.
And I'm very in touch with my frailties, you know, going to the bottom can really put you in a place where you're vulnerable and finally start going, you know, maybe people are right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's funny. It's one of the greatest things you can do for yourself is get rid of ego. It's hard to do it in this line of work, but if you can get rid of that, you're golden.
Absolutely.
Here's the thing about lead singers that I've, my own personal observation is, as far as vocal styles go, you look at some of the all-time greats. You look at Rod Stewart, Mick Jagger. I was hearing an Elvis Costello song the other day. They all have quirky, bizarre, weird things. They're not these great, clean, awesome vocalists. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Those people are backup singers.
Right.
The clean, awesome vocalists are. It's the people that have something that's a little unique, the raspiness of
character.
Rod Stewart's voice. The way that, Elvis Costello says, peace, love, and sound.
That was awesome.
You know what I mean? Thank you. I worked all week on that.
He actually is in a tribute band.
Right. But, I mean, it's...
Elvis Elvis, and not Stello.
You have some uniqueness in your pronunciation of words and how your vocal tone is, that it makes you stand out. I mean, that's what makes a singer, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that Tallahassee boy, Florida boy comes out sometimes and in the way I pronounce words and, you know, it's just, it is what it is,
well,
man.
Yeah. To be honest, there are a couple things that you did, like solo stuff, and you back up other bands, some different projects that you'd done. You know, after the Creed thing, you know, it was sort of in vogue to not like Creed. We've had our fun with Creed as well, and with you as well, you know, in all honesty. We were part of that. But then you do projects. Hey, man, he sounds good. It sounds good on that.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to pick the band besides Creed and besides the guys you work with on this album, what would be the band you'd most love to sing with? Because you have done in the past.
Oh, you know, in the past I would have said the Doors, but that dream came true.
Yeah, it did, and it was really good.
Yeah,
by the way,
it was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
the Eagles.
I
would love to sit down with those guys and write songs, man, and just jam with them.
Did you see the documentary? The one that 3 hours?
I haven't yet.
It's awesome.
Amazing. Oh,
it'll rock your world.
Really?
Yeah. It's really, really good. I want to get back to criticism because I've found that we're our own worst critics, so it's not critic can really say anything that you haven't thought yourself. And earlier you touched on clarity, and I would imagine in your sobriety, that's what you're searching for, as well.
Absolutely.
As acceptance,
right?
Right. So acceptance for, you know, things that you have done and, you know, for who you are and who other people are.
Right.
However, I'm sure you have some moments where you look back and you cringe at some of the things that you have said or have done, or have you gotten past?
You know, don't we all?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but I know. That's what I'm speaking.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, I think about things that all the time. That,
do you
know,
still
I'm
like? You're like, oh, man.
Yeah. If you say,
why did I say that?
If you say you have no regrets, you're not human. Everybody's got something,
or
they've regretted at one point in their life.
Well, yeah. Or you're Kanye West.
Yeah.
True.
He's not human.
Yeah. Well, definitely things that you're embarrassed of. You know, I mean, I look at all those experiences, and I'm like, you know what? If I didn't get drunk and black out on a poker show. And if you know, and make a complete fool out of myself doing kung fu and talking about my son living in my balls, you know, if I didn't do that, and my wife didn't force me to sit down and watch that 6 or 7 times,
yeah,
that was one less step that kept me from getting sober,
right?
Yeah, that's the point.
You know what I mean? True. I needed that. I needed that wake up call.
If you screw with the chain of events, and people say, "Oh, if I could just take care of that or extract that." You know, there's a very precise, even though sometimes it seems very random, the way things work out. And you start effing with that, you're in such a good place now, it could have been jeopardized.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it is what it is. And now, anytime I've gone to hang out with other people trying to get sober and stuff, and they're like, you know, what was your deal?
Yeah.
I'm like, go check it out on YouTube.
Right.
I definitely belong here.
Yeah, and if you're happy with who and where you are today, then all of that other stuff doesn't matter, or it does.
And you know what it's done? It's enabled me, now that I'm on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And that I'm sober and there, it's enabled me to help other people, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps me going on, because there was a point in time where everything was gone. You know, there was no more music.
Sure.
There was no more big rock and roll shows. There was no more band. There was nothing. So what was my purpose? And I really, that was time to get small. And I found purpose again in just trying to help one other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my life began to change.
If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Stapp who's joining us, and his album Proof of Life is out today. Is your wife here with you?
She sure is.
Well, that's her sitting over there, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, game over, dude.
You win.
Shocker.
You win.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank you, man.
No. And so she's touring with you. She's going around on this promotional tour with you right now.
She comes. She's my quote unquote Sharon Osbourne. She's my Sharon. She's awesome, man. She's my best friend.
Does she help run the career as well?
And she's a mom. She's a wife, and definitely we have pillow talk. I bounce things off of her, but mostly, you know, she's a mom and my wife, and she's also a children's book author. She has her own thing going on, and she was Miss New York
in 2004.
Yeah, you had that in the bag. Yeah. I'm from New York. Yeah. That's you. Yeah.
Hey, what opportunities would you like to capture again? Maybe something you missed out on, or if you could do it over again, or coming up. I mean, you mentioned working with the Eagles, but like, what is something that you just like, man, that was such a great opportunity, and either I blew it or I'm so glad I was a part of it?
You know, there's probably quite a few over the years if I really wanted to analyze it. For me, it's just being in the moment with everything that I'm going to experience going forward.
It's a good way to look
at
it.
Well, yeah. I mean, like being present and really, really just enjoying and appreciating in that moment what I'm doing.
So not just being sober, but acknowledging, hey, this is great.
This is awesome.
And yeah. Make note of it.
Yeah.
All right. We had Mark Tremonti on just a few weeks ago, maybe a month, 2 months ago.
God, he was a boring interview.
Yeah, but we did ask
him. He was a nice guy. Yeah. We were getting nothing out of him.
We asked him a question. I want to ask you the same thing because there's a series of videos on YouTube, and it's whatever band shreds. I'm a big Fish head, so there's a Fish shreds, but the funniest one, I think, is Creed shreds. Have you seen
no,
any?
No, I haven't.
Stop it.
He loves it. Tremonti
loves it.
They basically take away the actual audio and then put in
gibberish. It's like the guy is doing a lame impression of you, and he's just saying things that make no sense at all. You're singing the lyrics.
Oh, I would love that.
And the band in the background
things
too.
Are coming out, and the only time you actually hear music is when the camera goes over to a musician, so you got to see it. It does no justice explaining it. You'll have to.
I would absolutely love that.
Okay.
And I'm sure you probably bust out every once in a while with a because that's my anytime someone's trying to impersonate me, you know, in public.
That's me.
They're like, dude, I sing your songs in karaoke, man. Check it out. A quarter's in session. And I'm like, is that really how I sound?
But it's not just a lampooning of you. It's everybody. So you know, like when Tremonti's,
I'm so glad you just did that, Scott.
Yeah.
When Tremonti's strumming, the guitar is like a crank, crank, crank. It's really, really well done. So when the interview's over, if you have 5 minutes, I'm going to.
Let me ask you a question about your name, too. Scott's your middle name?
Scott, my birth name was Anthony.
Right.
So Scott is my middle
name. And is it true, the legend, that you changed your name because with your stepdad's name, your initials would have been ass?
Yes. That is absolutely true.
Is Anthony is your first
name? Anthony Scott Stapp.
Scott Stapp. And some couple kids at school in elementary school said, "Your ass." And, you know, after getting in a fight and getting suspended from school for a couple days, you know, when he wanted to adopt me, you know, I was like, "Can we move Scott to the front?"
So, he could understand the importance.
So that was when you were real young?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was
now
when
you're
I was
sass.
8 or 9. Now I'm sass.
Yeah, that's better.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Better than ass.
Yeah. Better than ass.
Although ass would have been cool now.
You know what? I've been called worse. Yeah. and I've been an ass in my life, so it might have been kind of foretelling.
Well,
tell us about your charities and with the I was reading you do a lot of stuff you're not in it for the recognition, but bring us up to date on what you have going on with your organization.
Well, you know, wherever I feel compelled in my heart when something's going on in the world, you know, I definitely just act on it. One thing that's really important to me is the hunger issue that's going on in this world, and working with programs like Feeding America,
right,
and Feed the Children. That's something that I always love to be involved in and try to point people to if they're looking to make a difference in their own communities.
We actually do what is the single largest single-sponsored food drive. It's the Camp Out for Hunger. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, and it's with Philabundant, so it's that same thing.
We just found out yesterday that in the years that we've been doing this, that we've raised over 3.25 million meals.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Mm-hmm.
Are you doing in between December 2nd?
Yeah.
Because if you're in Philly, we'd love to have you stop by. It's actually, believe it or not, it's a lot of fun. These guys don't leave the parking lot for an entire week. We're there most of the time as well, and it's down at the sports complex right in South Philly. It's a really good time.
You know what? I may be by the area because I'm going to still be going around and talking to people and telling them about the album. And if I'm nearby, I'm definitely going
to
come.
Let us know, man. We'd love to have you down. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I mean, we're there all day. So, like, seriously, if you want to come out and perform or something like that, there's a stage set up and everything, it's fantastic.
I'll be doing radio promo and stuff. But if I'm near the area and have a day off, I'll be here.
Cool.
Man, absolutely.
Okay.
Scott,
you.
What's the story on touring to support this album? Is that going to happen?
Yeah, man. We're making an announcement in the next 2 weeks. I'll be here in Philly. The dates are going to roll out. Again, like I said, the next 2 weeks, check out scottstapp.com or my Twitter or my Facebook for all that information. And I'm starting off here in the United States. Going to do a run here and then hit the rest of the world. And
do you go out with the studio musicians or you have a touring band?
I have a touring band, okay, which I'll be announcing on the same time that I announce my dates. And, you know, there's some guys that are formerly of bands that people know. So they're good guys, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Excellent. Well, the album is out. It's called Proof of Life. It's Scott Stapp. Very, a very open album. You're very, yeah. I mean, you've always been that way lyrically, I think. But this is to cover some things that you needed to get out.
Yeah, man.
Very personal record, it seems like. And you can grab that on, you know, I have a hard copy of a CD right here. Of course, you can order, download it digitally, all that stuff.
Yeah, man.
So we'll put links up to Scott's Twitter page and any other information on PrestonandSteve.com for those who want to check it out. Thanks for coming by this morning. Good luck with everything, all
right? Thank you, Preston, man. It was awesome. Always good to see you guys.
Excellent. Cool. For Scott Stapp. Yeah. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Hit up the WMMR.com contest page for your chance to win the Bud Light Platinum Seltzer Homegate Kickoff Prize Pack, including a $100 Primo Hoagies gift card, a four-pack of custom pint glasses, a case of Bud Light Platinum, and more. All delivered personally by members of the Preston and Steve Show. WMMR.com. Everything that rocks.
Our next guest is in the new film. He's in the starring role from Coen Brothers. It's a film called Inside Llewyn Davis. And it looks pretty, I mean,
the reviews are, man. And the reviews, especially for this one, are phenomenal. I mean, they're described as just a return to their best.
Yep. Some music from the film, which this gentleman sings, by the way. And we want to welcome Mr. Oscar Isaac to our show.
Yeah.
This morning. How you doing, Oscar?
Good, good. I'm doing great.
Let's get started with the song right away. Who's singing harmony with you on this, or is that yourself?
That's Marcus Mumford.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, of Mumford Acclaim.
And he is involved in the film how, besides the music?
He was an associate producer of the whole album, so he was involved in the whole soundtrack.
And his wife is your love interest?
Yes.
Okay.
Carrie Mulligan,
yeah.
Who's great. Does a very good American accent, I should say. Yeah,
she plays a very angry woman.
Yeah, she's very angry. My favorite is when she says that you should have double wrapped it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And wrapped it in electrical tape.
Yeah.
The Coen Brothers films have they have such presence. You know immediately if you're just flipping through the channels, and even if it's a movie you haven't seen before, you're like, this is Coen Brothers. You can tell by the cinematography. You can tell by the camera placement, the dialogue, all these things. It's just so...
And John Goodman.
And John Goodman. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's such a staple, but he's extraordinary in everything.
Let's talk a little bit about the story of the film, who you are, what it's about. Just give us a rundown of that for those people who are not familiar.
Yeah, it's basically, it's a story. It's a really tough week in the life of this folk singer trying to make it in 1960s Greenwich Village.
About the time that Dylan's coming up.
Well, right before. Right. You know, it's a bit of an apocalyptic film.
Okay.
You know, it's like
right.
The end times of folk. Right before the Messiah comes and you know changes everything, which is Dylan.
Right.
So this is a guy that plays old folk songs, and he's not really finding an avenue for his expression, and he's frustrated about it, and people aren't that interested in what he has to do. And you know, the Coens said, you know, the night that the Beatles played on Ed Sullivan, there was an opening act.
Yeah.
And imagine being those dudes.
Right. You know? Yeah. So, yeah. That's wild.
You know, like
yeah.
They never went on to play again. And so they wanted to make a movie about those guys.
It's funny because I'm impressed by the fact that it's a guy who's sure of his talent, maybe not completely sure, but he soldiers on. And there's a point where you're talking about you don't want to give up and just be one of the general people. Right. And it's pointed out to you, well, that's how most people live. Like the anomaly is the world of entertainment and what you're looking to do.
Right.
But as an actor, and as a musician yourself, there are times, I'm sure, coming up where you had that same sort of, am I on the right trajectory here? Am I on the right path? You're always doubting yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a lifestyle that makes you constantly reassess yourself.
And constantly dealing with rejection.
Yeah.
You're at the whim of other people's subjective opinions.
Right.
And there is a constant refrain in the film. He even sits down to go to the bathroom, and on the you know, there's graffiti on the wall. It says, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And this constant echo of, "What are you doing? What is it that you do?"
So you could really tune in with that as far as like your real life is concerned.
Right? Yeah, for sure. You know, you're questioning what your motives are. Like, why are you subjecting yourself to this kind of humiliation?
Well, it's got
to
be a little bit weird for you because you're a graduate of Juilliard.
Right.
So when you get into Juilliard and you're in Juilliard, you're a star. You're like, man, I'm
in Juilliard.
I'm cutthroat. Yeah.
Then you graduate and you're kind of at the bottom again. You got to work your way up.
Yeah.
You started working pretty quickly though.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate. I mean, the movie's a lot about success and failure being on a knife's edge. And there's very few people that are these shooting star geniuses that are going to do whatever they're going to do no matter what, like Shakespeare or whatnot. Sure. But the rest of us have to work really hard and then have a lot of luck.
Well, you started with music, correct? I mean, you're a musician
in
a band.
Kind of all started at the same time. So I've sang badly for many, many years.
Well, it couldn't have been that badly. Your band opened for Green Day, correct?
Yeah, well, opened.
Yeah.
We played it in the festival on, like, the third stage.
Oh, okay.
That counts, though.
Yeah, that does count. Vans Warped Tour you did as well?
Yeah, we did the Warped there. Yeah,
that's something.
And no, for sure. No, we were a pretty good band. It was like a punk ska band. But it was a similar thing, you know? It was like 99, 2000. It was kind of starting to fade away. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what are you doing? You know, what are we doing? And that's when I auditioned for school and decided, all right, well, I'm going to maybe let the band thing go for a bit and just, you know, study acting.
Was it true that I guess somebody at some point said that you were with a troupe and you were basically told you didn't have the talent to get into Juilliard? None of these people would ever amount to it. You almost took it as a challenge?
That's right. Yeah. I was in Miami doing like children's theater.
Right.
And we had to go around and introduce each, you know, ourselves. And one guy was like, I went to Juilliard.
Right.
As if any of us could ever go to Juilliard.
Right.
And I'd always stayed in my head. So when I visited New York, I passed by and I was like, Juilliard. Yeah. And went in and asked for an application. They're like, oh, the deadline's, that was last week.
And where's that dude now, right?
Yeah.
I think we're as much a fan of the movie making process as the movies themselves. I think it fascinates us because we're not in it. You know, we get glimpses of it from time to time.
Right.
And so when you get cast in this movie and you're going about it, and then Justin Timberlake gets cast in it as well, that guy's a superstar. Mm. Is that at all weird or intimidating or odd?
Not really. I mean, you know, the movie is about musicians, and really the film is a concert film. All the music in the film was done live.
T-Bone Burnett,
the legendary T-Bone Burnett, who's the musical Mr. Miyagi.
And has won Oscars for work with the Coen brothers.
Exactly, and their sensibilities completely lined up. So all of that's done live. So it wasn't a surprise that they wanted some musicians in there, some real musicians. And so when he came aboard, I mean, he's great. The dude's got crazy range.
Yeah.
There's a song called The Old Triangle that he and Marcus do the bass for. Mm-hmm. And
they're the bass for that.
They're the bass.
All right. So honestly, I don't know how you don't get caught up in this, but like the Huffington Post and all these publications are calling you the next big thing. So do you buy stock in that?
I mean, not really. You know, I mean, that you know, the refresh button happens a lot. You know, they're constantly looking
for
the next
thing. You got to keep it in check.
Yeah. You know,
it'd be nice if you were the next big thing.
Hey,
though, right?
Yeah. But the next big thing also was like the next big breakdown. And
the thing that you never do, and we've learned about this and just seen other people who fall into the folly of, and we call it buying your own crap, you know, where you believe that. But there was a review, and I was going through some of the reviews. It says here, a sterling lead performance from Oscar Isaac helps the Coen brothers deliver an impressively nuanced character study. That's from a major reviewer whose name I didn't write down. But and all the reviews are excellent. The movie's Rotten Tomatoes scores is through the roof.
It is great. I mean, the Coens, they know how to set the stage and set the field for you to knock it out of the park.
Right.
For everybody to do their best, absolute best work.
It must be nice having your first name as Oscar, because anytime your name gets mentioned, you can say, well, they're talking Oscar.
Yeah.
Well, they will be talking Oscar, especially with this song. So, you know, Oscar wins an Oscar. Who gets that Oscar if this song is nominated and you win?
Does that go to T-Bone Burnett? Does it go to you and Marcus Mumford?
Well, I don't know how that goes because these are all old folk songs. So I don't think, I think they're all for like original songs. There's one original song on here, which is the Please Mr. Kennedy song, which it's Justin, myself, and Adam Driver from Girls. And it's a really wacky song.
Okay.
But as far as the other ones, I don't really know what the rules are with that.
Hey, do you have a favorite Coen Brothers movie?
Yeah, I think my favorite one is the first one that I saw that just blew my little kid mind, which was Raising Arizona.
Yes! You know, do we close with a theme of that every day?
Yeah.
I judge people on whether or not they like that movie. And if they don't get it, I don't really want to be friends with that person.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah, like I remember I saw it and I thought it was so funny, but I felt so sad and weird afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's just their thing, you know? And they've said that from the get-go and out of the mouth of Barton Fink. They said, we make theater about the common man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they always do. Every one of their heroes is a common man in weird circumstances, you know, finding themselves in like this existential crisis.
Well, the dude, I mean, like, you know,
exactly.
What a loser that guy is, but he becomes this anti-hero.
He's an iconic figure now.
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And people say very similar things about Lewin, you know, he's a loser. He's, you know.
An a-hole.
He's a big one. Yeah. And yet they find a window into him, so you have empathy and sympathy for him.
Well, there are gray areas in life, and that's the thing. And I was reading a review that spoke of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as, you know, supposed to be loosely based on the Odyssey, and that they were saying that this film is more like Alice in Wonderland with the characters that you're encountering.
Yeah, it is a strange, you know, a stranger in a strange land.
Right.
Someone that's so self-aware that it alienates them and they become an island unto themselves.
And let me ask you, because they also pointed out that they described you as a ghost in your own world. Like you're a ghost to your own life where you're sort of watching your life happen.
Exactly.
Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, exactly. And there's just this oiled pole and he's just...
Yeah,
constantly trying to climb up it and slipping down.
That's uncomfortable when I watch stuff like that because we've all been there where you're like, oh Christ, am I making the right call here?
That frustration, life squeezing you, and these are the noises that you make.
Yeah.
Hey, if you just happen to be checking in, this is Oscar Isaac who we're speaking to, and he's talking about the movie Inside Llewyn Davis. And you know, you mentioned that the character is an a-hole. Boy, you played an a-hole in Sucker Punch, man. For those who may not be familiar with Oscar by name, if you saw the movie Sucker Punch, he's the main antagonist in the film.
Yeah,
and he's the guy who runs the nightclub, and
it's a movie I was talking to you before he came on that I don't even remotely understand, but you were visually, I love Zack Snyder, I think it's impressive, I'll watch it every time it's on.
He went big with it. That's
he went big with it, and you were the standout. I remember watching that movie, going, this dude is intense.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah,
that was I mean, I was the only guy.
It had to be good working conditions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It wasn't bad. Yeah. And actually, for that one, I think that was the first time I got to do music in a film and sing Love is a Drug, the Roxy music song.
Right, right.
In this big dance sequence that ended up getting relegated to the credits.
Talk about the ultimate dichotomy. You're bare bones Coen style, and that's over-the-top stuff. Would you say now you're at home at both? Or?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, it's always, you know, it's interesting talking about like all the reviews and those kind of things. I think that whenever the personality gets bigger than the work, there's a problem. You know?
Right, right.
So you always got to, if the personality gets bigger than the work's got to come up even more.
I wonder if being in a musician and being in a band is good preparation for movie work because you get used to being in an ensemble.
Absolutely, and used to people throwing lighters at your face and things like that.
There's not as much chicken wire between you and the audience.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have to ask about the cat in the movie. I have 8 cats of my own. I assume.
What?
Yeah, I do. I'm a crazy cat dude.
That's why you have the band-aids on.
Yeah. But I assume it's multiple cats they use, right?
I am not a cat man.
Yeah, yeah.
I got put in the hospital by a cat
really
4 years ago. What? I was just sitting on my porch and this cat walked up and it had a little tag and his name was Oswald, which should have tipped me off.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
the president.
I started petting it, and then, you know, after a few minutes, it just decided to bite the hell out of my hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the next day, I woke up with a red line going up my arm.
Oh,
it got in my lymphatic system, and I was in the hospital for 2 days.
Did you 90%, have
90%. Well, it was a bite.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So,
it's the same thing.
But
anyway,
so then I show up, you know, cut to 4 years later, I show up to the Coen set, and they're like, we got 4 cats, and we're going to tie them to you, and you're going to run as fast as you can into the subway. Sound good? I'm like, that's great. I love cats. I love them. And sure enough, you know, and cats, you can't train them. Well, at least they couldn't train the ones we had.
Right.
So they had one that was a little bit more
relaxed or sedate of a personality. And that one I'd carry around, but sometimes that one would look dead. So we'd have to have one that was a little squirrelier. And that was the one you'd have to tie to me because it would constantly want to get away and like scratch me in the face.
Did they have their nails?
They sure did.
They sure did.
Hey, Oscar, I want to talk about the focus of the film, which is the folk music and that time in New York City and the village and all those things. Were any of the old folk singers a part of this film? I mean, not necessarily in it, but maybe as consultants or anything like that. Or did you get to rub elbows with some of those people?
Well, there was definitely inspirations. I'll tell you the person that rubbed off the most, which is someone that's actually quite Lewin-like. Very quick story. I was just for the audition. I knew the audition was coming up, and I was doing this really tiny little independent film. And there was a guy playing just like the drunk guy at the bar. This older gentleman had like one line in between takes. There was a guitar sitting around, and he picked it up and started playing. And he was one of the most amazing finger pickers I had ever heard, and playing in exactly this style of music. So I go up to him, I'm like, "Hey, man, you're incredible. You know, I've got this audition coming up. It's kind of based loosely on Dave Van Ronk. Do you know
the mayor of
Mayor of McDougal Street? Who was like this Greenwich Village staple,
Quite made it, but
exactly.
But
Dylan, Dylan stole House of the Rising Sun from him, and you know all sorts of other things. And he mentored a lot of people. Anyway, I was like, "Do you know him?" He's like, "Yeah, I played with Dave." And are you serious? He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Where do you live?" He's like, "I live on McDougal Street, above the old Gaslight. I teach guitar."
Wow.
So his name's Eric Franzen. So I go to his place, and he just started playing me all these old records and recordings of him and Dave playing. And, you know, and he said, "How long you been playing?" I'm like, "I've been playing for about 20 years. He goes, "Nah, you've owned the guitar for 20 years. You've played for like 6 months." And so he started teaching me how to play this style, and he's living the life. And he actually, I would go and open up for him at this club, Cafe Vivaldi, and all around the village.
Wow.
And, you know, he actually lived it. And you know, for him, is also a little, has lived a bit of a frustrating life as a musician.
You know,
so
it was,
he was a big inspiration.
It was wild because at that time, a lot of the people that defined that scene and were known for coming out of Greenwich Village, none of them came from New York. They all went there. You know, they were not...
Exactly. There was very few that were from New York, including Dylan. You know,
He
would make up... This guy's very much not Dylan. You know, Dylan made up this whole mythology about where he was from, and he would change his story every other day. But Van Ronk and Lewin, very much so, they're someone from the boroughs, or a kid from the boroughs, or blue collar... They're the workmen. They're not the poet.
Right.
How lucky was it that you met that guy?
How completely serendipitous.
Yeah.
It teaches you. Talk to the drunk at the end of the bar.
Right.
Exactly.
That's the lesson?
That's the lesson I'm taking away from it. And avoid cats with attitude.
I was looking at the cast, and obviously you mentioned John Goodman. He's a staple in the Coen films.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, Justin Timberlake's in it, and as we said, Kerry Mulligan. I saw F. Murray Abraham. I saw you in a scene with him. Yeah. Wow, he's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, man, he's intense. And talk, you know, the irony that he plays basically the gatekeeper for the folk world.
Yeah.
Lewin takes this really horrible trip all the way to Chicago to audition for him. And the fact that it's Salieri. You know,
It's holding the keys, you know.
And he pissed Scarface off.
He dropped out of a helicopter. That was, you know, and he's a formidable dude. So that was really intense. It was just one day of work that he had, but he really plays, he gets into the skin of these guys that were the arbiters of people's lives, you know.
When you're doing their dialogue, the Coen brothers' dialogue, is it a case where they split up? Okay, one of the, Joel is pointing the camera and Ethan saying, like, "I want to say you to say this." How do they split that up?
It varies. You know, they kind of tag team a little bit. They never really check in with each other that much. As far as like, you know, or you go talk to them, or you go talk to them. Someone always takes the foot forward. But it really, you know, it's having two geniuses, two brains making the same exact movie. You know, they're completely on the same page, so you just have double the horsepower.
Are they the same, like, that? When you're talking to one, you're like, "Man, you're so much like your brother."
Yeah, I mean, there's the their vibe is very different, very, very, very similar, but, you know, they're different people.
So are there disagreements?
When there's a disagreement, I just do whatever the last guy that came up to me said.
Oh, and do you go over and say, "You know, Joel's saying stuff about you."
It's not what your brother said.
I want to play a little bit of the song you mentioned, "Please, Mr. Kennedy." And this is the main original song from the... Is this you singing this?
That's the three of us. Justin Timberlake, Adam Driver, and myself.
1 second, please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Up on.
I want to go. Don't show me out of school.
Oh.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go.
Don't
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? That was huge. And that actually set off a bit of a resurgence for bluegrass music and people who maybe not have sampled that kind of rootsy country feel before. Do you think this soundtrack might open up some doors for people who have not really fallen into the folk music lore?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I know that the radio often can sound like a Renaissance fair. with the resurgence of a lot of
A lot of, I think it's Mumford has done that. I mean, these guys know. I really don't care for it personally because it's being labeled as a form of rock music, and I see it as something completely different. But it certainly has opened the doors for some sounds.
But a lot of that's you know, like anthem music, you know, and that's a little bit different than the roots, you know, more of the roots music, which is a bit more intimate. You know, there's a reason why folk music became protest music because it's so direct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it can be really simple and really direct.
Did you always like it? Because you obviously, you know, earlier in the interview you said you played in a ska punk band.
Yeah.
Which is totally
not the same.
A little bit different.
But did you always have a
I grew up listening to Dylan and you know, Cat Stevens and Simon and Garfunkel. So like they're you know, that was obviously after this, but you know, T-Bone has talked about this too. He said, you know, that when those guys from DC went down at the turn of the century and did all those field recordings of people, you know, the poorest of the poor, that was the single, and then broadcast those recordings across the world.
Right.
That was the single most democratizing act in the history of man.
Yeah.
You know, that's what T-Bone says. And I have to agree with him, you know, because that's what all modern music is based on, is American roots music. And it's so linked to American history. And so whatever gets us closer to that again, and I think...
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, that's what was happening in the 60s. You know, Pete Seeger taught all these little kids in these camps about folk music, and then they grew up and started doing this.
Yeah.
Oscar, there's a great documentary we always mention called Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox Story. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah. My God. Their trip through the folk music.
Oh, do we have the clip of his Dylan-esque song?
Somewhere around here, we probably
spot on.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But that's the beauty in it, is that you can have fun with it and it can still be silly. If you don't take it too seriously, they won't take it too seriously.
Mailboxes drip like lampposts in the twisted birth canal of the Coliseum. Rimjob fairy teapots mask the temper tantrum. Oh, say, can you see?
Rimjob party? Right?
Yeah.
Oh, John C. Reilly, man.
He's so spot on.
Oscar, Preston had mentioned Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which when that movie came out, the soundtrack was a hit as well. I know we had it. You purchased it.
I loved it immediately, and I'm not really a country music fan, but I heard Man of Constant Sorrow. I'm like, that is a damn good song, and I fell in love with the entire album.
This YouTube hole that I fell into last night, I ended up purchasing Fare Thee Well on iTunes, and then I pre-ordered the album, which comes out on November 11th. But I also, there's a movie called Once. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Of course. It's great.
Glenn Hansard. I labeled that as a musical because...
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if this has that sort of same feel where it's not necessarily musical like Hairspray.
Yeah. Well, you were saying it's, in a way, it's sort of like a concert movie, too.
That's right. I'd say that's right. You know, the music, it's not a device for the plot or even a total expression of the character, but it's like it's a window into them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all these songs are. They're all sung in their entirety.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a little snippet of someone saying onto the story.
Especially when the music's good.
Exactly. Yeah. The movie starts with a full song right off the bat. So they're saying, this is the kind of movie this is going to be. You're going to hear this guy play songs in their entirety.
It's really nice to hear you be very proud of a movie, because we were talking about it before. Every now and then we'll have somebody come in and they're pitching it, but they don't believe in it.
That's been this guy. It's true. Yeah, it's hard. You know, it's a lot of energy to find a way to invest or get excited about talking about
the movie. But you
know what? But this one, it's different, man. I can talk about this all day.
But even with the stuff that you got to go out and promote, there are people who worked on the movie and people whose livelihoods depend on the movie doing well and so on and so forth. So the onus is on you to go out.
Yeah, you're not the only person involved in this.
Right,
thing,
yeah.
Can you see a finished product, that, you know, a film that you've been in and you're watching and you go, damn, I thought that was going to be good, too.
Yeah. While we were shooting it seemed like it was going to be really good.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, that's happened often, for sure. Yeah.
Nature of the business, man.
The word on this is just phenomenal. Yeah. I'm very excited to see this. Love the Coen brothers, and right from Sucker Punch and the other movies I've seen you in, I'm like, this dude's going to go.
Oh, right on, man.
And it's a holiday release, man. That usually means pretty good things.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's called Inside Llewyn Davis and his stars Oscar Isaac. Thank you for coming by here, Oscar.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Nice to meet you. Let's hear it for him, guys.
Yeah. All right.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay there.
Love MMR? Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre. Bizarre File.
Brought to you by McGuff Bus Company. McGuff Bus Company is now hiring for experienced drivers. McGuff offers flexible schedules, industry top dollar pay, and more. Visit McGuffBus.com.
Grand Junction, Colorado police are investigating a bizarre strong-arm robbery where a man pepper sprayed a woman and stole her monkey.
Stole her monkey?
Yes, when a parking lot pet sale turned bad.
Now, how can a parking lot pet sale turn bad? When you have monkeys.
The woman met the man in the parking lot of a La Quinta Inn to complete a pre...
Hey, they're selling monkeys in the parking lot! What? Yeah, big tent sale full of monkeys.
So you didn't know it. You just drive up and you see it.
Holy crap, they're selling monkeys!
Yeah. So they met in the parking lot of a La Quinta Inn... to complete a previously arranged deal to sell him a black capuchin monkey, or capuchin, however you pronounce it.
You got the monkey?
Instead, the man sprayed the woman in the face with pepper spray, grabbed the pet carrier containing the monkey, and ran off.
There's no honor amongst monkey salesmen.
The woman was injured during the attack, but police said she wasn't serious.
I saw the whole thing.
Yes.
It turned out like this. The transaction was going swimmingly well until pepper spray was revealed, and then, of course, it got hairy. No monkey pun intended.
The woman described her attacker as a Middle Eastern man who is 35 to 40
years old.
Just
the kind of guy who would sell monkeys.
Stands about 5 feet 5 inches tall, has a thin build. The man has a short beard, wears glasses, a blue shirt, and possibly a vest.
Huh. It's just like an idiot.
Police said it's illegal to possess a capuchin monkey in Colorado.
Why?
I don't know.
Because they might discharge in public?
It's against the law.
What if you have the safety on?
Anyone? Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
You can conceal it.
Yeah.
Your monkey.
Conceal carry for your monkey. Oh.
Anyone who saw anything suspicious in the area is asked to call the police. So, yes, you might want to call the police and give them that distraction.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I saw the whole thing. Me? I'm a monkey.
A female shop assistant fought off a machete-wielding thief with a mop and a bottle of vodka.
Love it.
Police said the brave shop assistant refused to give in to the thief's demands for cash, even when he threatened to stab her with the machete.
Will not yield!
And kitchen knife that he was armed with.
By the way, again, a machete!
I had another machete story I didn't even include today. There's a lot. Machetes are all the rage. Yeah.
I just recently bought a machete. I'm thinking I made a wise choice. I'm going to start carrying it.
Think so. Instead, while she was just inches away from the blade of the knives, she used a mop and a bottle of vodka to fight the man off, protecting herself and her female colleague. Catching the hooded robber by surprise, she was then able to raise the alarm. The thief was forced to flee the store empty-handed. A spokesman for the staff at the shop were very shaken by the incident, but they had been unharmed, so everything worked out all right. A woman who died last week at the age of 20 never aged. This is a sad story. Yes, Brooke Greenberg of Ryerstown, Maryland, puzzled medical professionals for years because she still looked and acted like a toddler, like a baby. Folks.
I remember seeing the video on this story.
I've told you guys about her before. Doctors eventually dubbed her extremely rare condition called Syndrome X. In the womb, Brooke would not develop 1 month and then play catch up the next, but that stopped at around age five when all development stopped.
Wow.
She arrived 1 month early at just 4 pounds with a rare condition, anterior hip dislocation. She needed surgery because her dislocated hips pushed forward and her put her legs in an awkward position. The family realized that something was wrong as Brooke's younger sister aged past her. Mm. So they brought her to see many different specialists in search of answers, but her condition baffled all of them. Doctors told the Greenbergs to prepare for Brooke's death several times.
Scientists horrible.
Studied her DNA in hopes to learn more about human aging and extending youth. But she unfortunately passed away 20 years old and looked like she was like 4 or 5 years old.
This yeah.
is sad, sad yeah. news. On a lighter note, a Greek marketing group has created the first tweeting bra as part of a campaign from Nestle Fitness for October's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The social networking bra utilizes a special mechanism hidden under the hook of the bra.
So your breast can tell people that they're bored?
When it is unhooked, a signal is sent to a cell phone, which in turn notifies a server that generates a tweet. A popular Greek TV presenter, Maria Bakadimo, will be wearing the tweeting bra for 2 weeks. Whenever her bra comes off, a tweet will be sent to her followers reminding them to perform breast self-exams. The tweeting bra is also its own account on Twitter. Unfortunately, the bra only sends tweets in Greek at this time.
Yeah.
No?
No?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
All right.
That works, right?
Yeah. It was after the mashed potatoes and gravy went flying that the fillet knife came out. At least that's what the fiance of Kimberly Francisco told police.
Uh-huh.
Francisco.
That's fun to say.
Yeah. Francisco.
Thank you.
Francisco's fiance said that he and Francisco were in a verbal dispute when Francisco began throwing hot mashed potatoes and gravy at him.
You cannot conceal a monkey.
Francisco then got a fillet knife and tried to stab him with it. He said he disarmed Francisco and put the edged weapon behind a chair. Meanwhile,
Francisco, that's fun to say. Francisco.
Meanwhile, Francisco denied tossing the potatoes, saying that the spuds fell. She also said she didn't try to stab her fiance.
I would have loved to have been there for their deposition.
But an officer said, upon checking of the residence, I noticed food, to include mashed potatoes, appeared to be thrown around the kitchen. What was that? Okay.
Francisco, that's fun to say.
Francisco was arrested on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and domestic violence as well. And that is what I got for you in the bizarre file for now. We'll be right back. Stay down.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Tala. Celebrating our area's best talent. Bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Hear and see more at WMMR.com. Keyword, local shots. Tala, Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month. Sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
All right. What is with the smile here?
Because I totally forgot about this. It was just something that was kind of funny. And I know we don't normally talk about dreams, but there is a payoff here.
Okay.
When I got home on Friday night, my wife was in bed. She was sleeping. And all three of my kids were in the bed. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go sleep downstairs. Okay. You know? And so I slept.
How adorable is that, though? You see them all together.
It was great.
Everyone you love to death in one bed.
And so I didn't want to disturb them. So yeah. I was like, you know what? I'll just sleep on the couch tonight. And I'm fine with that. So I go downstairs, I turn on whatever it was, and I fall asleep. And I start having this really bizarre dream, and it's me and my father and Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, no.
Okay? And so in the dream, my dad and I won a trip on a private jet to go have dinner at Sylvester Stallone's house.
Right.
Okay? So in the dream, I finally get to meet Sylvester Stallone, and
How do you like your tater tots?
All right, so he starts talking to me, but I can't understand what he's saying. He's like, he's making no sense whatsoever. I'm like, no. I can't understand what Sylvester Stallone is saying.
Right.
And then I wake up, and I turn around, and Rocky III is on, okay?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And it is the scene
where Mickey dies right. in the locker room, and Sylvester Stallone is crying, and right. I actually start laughing because of this crying scene. And so this, it press, if you want to play, this is the part where Sylvester Stallone starts talking to me in my dream, and this is what I hear.
So you actually had this physically? This was in your dream?
This was in my dream.
Okay, here we go.
Oh my God! Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
You don't remember that?
I had written off yeah. that movie so long ago.
Oh my
that
God!
I didn't
Case.
Know that he. Good Lord, how long does that go on?
Another 10 minutes.
For a minute, yeah.
Is there more?
Yeah. That's the part where I woke up.
Yeah. The screaming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that...
Oh, God, I'm so glad I'm dying.
There's literally not one decipherable word. Nothing. Nothing that's even remotely understandable.
You know, it reminds me of the gibberish in that song Double Dutch Bus.
Do you think there was a script?
Yeah. It's written out there. His is it. I'm going to say it as is it. And then is it. Is it.
And what? Well, well,
Mercy notes. And those he notes. And then Lambs and Ivy. You need Ivy too. Who are you?
Wow, that is a horrible death scene. That's was anybody moved to tears in that scene? It's laughable. So you're hearing
so
this?
In my dream,
so is he standing there like in a tuxedo?
Okay.
With,
so in my dream, we're like outside. It's
you're very excited.
Beautiful field, this beautiful house in the right. background.
And does he come out?
And he comes out, and we're like talking. And this, so just imagine we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Amy must have upset him.
And I'm like, what is this guy saying?
Yeah. Are we early?
You're early. It's just, I said 5 o'clock. You're here at 4 o'clock, and I'm not ready. I just put the roast in. I just put it in, and it's gonna take another 3 hours, and everything's gonna get cold. It's gonna get cold.
Somebody says it sounds like my yawn laugh.
Actually, they're right,
but a couple of extra syllables.
What was that?
It sounds like a performing seal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounded like Sloth. That let
he says Mickey there.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. That's a Mickey?
Yeah, that was a Mickey.
Oh, please, go, let me, I'm done. Please, God, take me quickly.
Oh, poor Rocky.
Oh, man.
You want to talk to a dream analyst?
Yeah.
All right, let me go to Gene. Hi, Gene. Good morning.
Hey, sorry to bother you guys at work. I work for a dream studies group, and his dream is actually very simple to analyze. I put together a few things, and I came up with a small synopsis of what his dream means. Burgess Meredith movie.
There you go.
Wow.
Done.
Okay.
There we go.
Well done, Gene. Thank you for your professional opinion.
You pledge yourself to Burgess Meredith movies.
And analysis.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway. Hold on.
There it is!
Yes. See? See what I mean? That's what I think it sounds like. I'm trying to play the tutor.
It's
on
tough,
this.
Right? Yeah. You can't do it, right?
I can't
do it. You need like 5 extra hands.
Now, Mickey has a heart attack because they get into a shoving match inside the ring, right, with Mr. T.
With Mr. T, that's right.
That's what happened?
That's what happens.
God. And it puts me in that,
I only watch the first movie. I don't watch any of the other ones. I just
number
don't
two
do it.
Is nice. Mm. Three becomes... Starts to enter ridiculous territory. Four is the absolute epitome of ridiculousness. Five tries to reclaim the original Rocky charm, but is horrible.
And then Rocky Balboa is
fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah. Those are the only two. I watch Rocky 1 and Rocky Balboa, and that's it.
Which is the Russians?
Four.
Okay, I like that one.
That's the best one.
And here's what happened one time. I like that one too. Same thing happened with Rocky Balboa one time while I was watching it on TV. Came in mid-fight, and the same thing happened with another movie yesterday. It was War of the Worlds was on.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that version, the Tom Cruise
version. It's
Tom
a good version, yeah.
And so I come in the middle, and the aliens are attacking, and it's this big, long scene, and I wanted to watch it. And I watch it for about 10 minutes, and I realize I'm watching it on a Spanish language channel because there was no dialogue.
Right,
it was an action scene for like 5 or 10 minutes, and I get most of the way into it, and then all of a sudden, ¿dónde está para that? I'm like, oh man, I can't watch it anymore.
But it was on in regular English.
Yeah, I've had to find it
in good old American.
A little bit later on. Hey, there's another piece of audio I'd like to play for you guys, and this was intern Ed sent this over, and I don't know where he got it, but it is it's a simulation as to what a schizophrenic might hear in their head. And it's pretty freaky, man.
And who decided that this might be what a schizophrenic hears in their head?
Psychologists and so forth that have dealt with schizophrenics for years, and from hearing interviews and testimonials from them about what they perceive is going on in their mind.
Now, full-blown schizophrenia is fairly rare, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
But interesting. Right,
but I mean, there's usually...
Does it sound like the Rocky stuff?
Well, kind of. There's a...
Killer, mommy. Killer, Rocky. Killer.
There's a running commentary that goes on in your mind. Now, while I have no idea of any of this stuff, but we all have an inner voice of some sort.
I do.
You hear, you know, whether it's your ego or your id or whatever, of suggestions of what you're thinking, thoughts that are going through your mind. Well... In schizophrenia, these things run away and control and suggest things, and it's crazy. And I've actually heard simulations before. There was one I had seen. It was actually a video of what life in the footsteps of someone who has schizophrenia might be like, and it shows them in their house, and they're going to take their medication, and they hear in their voice saying, don't take it. It's poison. Don't do it. It's going to kill you. They want to kill you. You know, it's things like that.
Well, that's scary.
But this uses
left and right channel?
The channels to kind of swirl around in your mind. And, Nick, you had a close family member who...
There's my uncle. He's a paranoid schizophrenic. And, yeah. And I'm interested to hear this because, for him, stoplights would speak to him.
Yeah.
So he'd be in an intersection, and he would get signals, and he never got the proper medication. He passed a few years ago. And, it, you know, it was awful.
But listen to this. This is pretty... freaky stuff,
right.
but this is kind of what you supposedly hear.
So stupid. Look at you. You know you can't cross the road. There are bad things on the other side of the road. The cars are coming. The cars are coming. Jump. Jump now. Jump in front of the car. Go on. Go on. Do it. Do it. No, don't. Don't.
Touch you.
Worthless.
Did you touch that one?
Stupid. Mm. Point.
So... Yeah. Are the voices always British?
Stupid. You're stupid and so crazy. You're playing with your dally whacker. You're going to see the Beefeaters and Piccadilly Circus. Piccadilly Circus. You're going to go to Buckingham Palace, aren't you?
No.
Sounds like Loki.
I live in America.
You're going to go to Manchester today, aren't you?
No.
I live
in Kensington.
Can't get a flight.
Can't get off of work.
It reminds you of the new cell phone commercial with James Earl Jones.
Why is Marissa talking?
Yes.
Steve's in the middle of a bit.
It's all right, though. Good. Continue.
Which commercial is that?
With James Earl Jones and the British guy.
Oh, I love those. I was telling you about those, where they're reading the texts.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, thank you. Very funny.
Guess we're done with this.
No.
It's all right.
Do you want to hear some more of it?
Steve. I'm so stupid. Why did I say that? Why? I was doing so well. I gave a great traffic report and I said everything correctly. Why? It's stupid. I'm so stupid when I did that.
How'd you get in my head?
Why do I sit on a booster seat and work so professionally? It's not like I'm at Denny's where I have to be a parallel to the table to eat my food. Stupid.
All right, do you want to hear some
more? Why is Kathy better than me? Kathy thinks she's so much prettier than I, but she's wrong.
Now you're Nick's head.
That's right. Yeah. All
right, here's a little bit more of this.
She knows. Yes, corporate coffee futures and professional design future concept to have professional living and function money to be independent and wealth generation for entertainment. I have no function for communication and investment. Coffee futures at 23% investment. I have to have Claudia Schiffer effect style. Corporate coffee futures in professional design future concept to have professional.
Where can I get some good pizza?
Excuse me?
Where can I get some good pizza?
No, I think this is the ramblings, the things that don't make any sense, and
you know Gary Lauer.
Okay.
You know Gary Lauer, you love him. You want to kiss him?
Oh, why do you want to kiss Gary Lauer?
Oh, yeah! Somebody said James Mason is British. Maybe he can end
up in
why do you drink Thunderbird all the time? What makes it so enticing to you? It's cheap smell, and you love it.
Love it. You love Thunderbird. You have to drink it when friends drop by unexpectedly.
That's exactly right. I can't even fight the voices in my brain. They're correct. I do love it so. It's so relaxing on a nice, chilly afternoon.
Hey, yeah, let me do a little bit more.
Money to be independent and wealth generation for entertainment.
It's impossible to tell what is really on here and what you were doing, by the way.
Imagine if that was, though.
This is an audio simulation of what you might hear.
Okay, you know, obviously this is a guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is just an idea of what it might be like. And I don't know. I got it from intern Ed, so okay. I have no
maybe
idea.
Maybe he's schizophrenic.
There was no story that came along with it.
I'm going to sabotage Anani a bit. I'm going to give him false information and record something myself. Investment coffee futures at 23% investment. I have to have Claudia Schiffer effect style. Corporate coffee futures and professional design future concept and professional living and function money to be independent and wealth generation for
entertainment. Okay, now I can't understand.
When you hear the voice, when you hear a voice in your head, well, people ask, you know, when they come up with bits or jokes or so on and so forth, they're doing stuff on the fly. I mean, 99% of the show is improv. We know where we're going, but... I hear a different thing, and I hear in my head a sort of a second soundtrack, like a second thing saying try this or shift this around, and it's you know, it's just the way I think. The same thing that makes me horrible at math, I don't think in a linear fashion,
right?
So when you hear a voice in your head, do you hear a tangible voice? Do you hear a
yeah, I mean, on occasion,
yeah.
And to where it can even lead to, if I'm thinking. And you know how that can lead to thinking out loud, where you start saying something.
Right, right.
Okay, I need to do this, and I got to make sure, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. And you actually physically say that. It's just that whatever I'm thinking manifesting through my mouth.
Right.
So I'm already hearing what I perceive as my own voice saying something. Or hearing what seems like someone else entirely.
Right.
Not your own psyche.
So... What Nick, with your uncle, is it your uncle, right?
Yeah.
With the streetlight, he actually hears the streetlight talking to him.
The few times where he tried to get a little professional, or he actually was forced into getting some professional attention, it was similar to describing what we're listening to right now. The number of voices layered, and it's, to me, it kind of sounds like what Harry Potter goes through when Voldemort's in his mind. You know?
Yeah,
like
it, sure.
It's like there are actual, literal, separate voices within your brain, and you cannot distinguish them between that and what you're talking about, Steve, which is, you know, that's the voice, that's Steve Morrison's subconscious.
Right.
Or conscious. That's you talking to yourself. He couldn't tell the difference between his own head and other voices outside of it.
After Ed sent this over, I was on YouTube, and I kind of fell into the hole. And I went and I found some videos that were of schizophrenics that were being interviewed. And this was for the purposes of medical students and so forth to observe what schizophrenics are about. And there was I watched one with this woman and she's like, yeah, Michael's arguing with me all the time. He was going on about this. And she's talking about a voice in her head.
Wow.
But this other person named Michael. And it was like, wow, just bizarre.
It's sad also if you have that sort of situation and you don't realize that in many cases it's treatable. If you've lived in that world, you don't know what is maybe perhaps. And this
other voice is telling you, that's poison.
Right.
Don't take that. It's they're trying to kill you. You will die if you take
that. Heavy
stuff,
yeah.
What if those other voices in your head were actual thoughts of other schizophrenics?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, I don't know.
And you were just tuned in with that.
Well, that's it. Casey, that's a kind of a standard schizophrenic delusion that there is someone broadcasting to you. It's got a name. It's like remote broadcast, thought broadcast or something.
One of the guys, was it the guy who shot up the hospital? I think he was claiming that he was being direct voices were being piped into his head.
Yes, we actually have audio of that.
Yeah, there we go.
That was what he was hearing in his head. No, it's wild stuff. Here's a little bit more of that simulation.
Hello, 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 hello.
Where are the sausages?
Sausages, are they a prominent part of that whole thing, Preston?
Why are you ignoring me?
You bad.
Hello, hello, hello. Disgusting.
Where are the sausages?
I'm in the mood for sausages. I really love sausages. Any kind of meat otherwise I'm going to the sausages. There they are. I see the sausages. Let me find the sausages. Kathy's got big boobies. Kathy's got big boobies. And big boobies.
All right, anyway.
Wow.
Yeah,
living
wild.
In that world.
Yeah. A paranoid schizophrenic should never listen to our show.
No. Well, you want to talk to one?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know if he's paranoid schizophrenic, but apparently Adam, who's on the phone line, let's find out, says he's schizophrenic. Hey, Adam, good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. I was diagnosed with schizophrenia right before my 18th birthday, around New Year's Eve.
How old are you now?
24.
24 years old. Yeah. And I assume you're on medication, Adam.
Yeah, I take my medication every day. I see a therapist every so often, and
Adam, when you were before the treatment, I don't know if you can recall whether or not this was the case, but did you hear things similar to what we were playing in your head?
No, not so much. They weren't quite that profound as far as like the actual descripting like of different words.
Right,
I definitely recall. For me, it was like any conversation I would pick up on around me.
Yeah.
I would like interpret to look for like some kind of like hitting more paranoid meaning.
Okay.
But you know, mine is obviously not quite as profound as like people that are like in like you know hospitals
sure.
for their entire life.
Yeah.
You know, as scary as this may sound, I do live in society.
It doesn't. It doesn't sound at all.
I actually had a friend named Rex who was diagnosed schizophrenic and on medication. You know, he was a little bit off, but he was certainly not dangerous, and he wasn't. You know,
I don't have the violent tendencies of it. Mine are definitely more like I just you know I guess paranoid would be the word, but it just like. Things just, you know, strike me unusually. I mean, I don't really tell people, and most people probably never even imagine it, but...
Wow.
Well, you're doing all the right things. And how often to therapy a week are you?
I go about once a month.
Okay, so it sounds like you have it managed.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two kids, 3 and 1.
Right.
And, you know, as long as, you know, you just, you know, stay straight and... fly right, as they say.
Oh, it sounds like you've got it covered, and you certainly sound fine. So
yeah, it sounds like you're managing it.
Good
well,
for you for working it through.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. I listen to you guys every single day. So.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Adam.
You guys rock. Take care.
See you later, man. Thanks a lot. So, yeah, in certain cases, I mean, some are more severe than others, obviously.
Imagine you got to deal with that in life. You know, wow. You just try to, everyone tries to get through. Everyone has these sort of stress situations or just things that, you know, like you talked about having going into a funk now and then, Preston. Yeah. You can't even figure out why. Imagine that's playing in your head while you're in that funk.
Psh, man, drive you to a breaking point.
Yep.
It could be bad. All right, well, listen, why don't we take a break?
We'll be back. Stay where you are.
Freshen up your look with a fall merch update at MMR's Rock Shop. Head to WMMR.com and grab the latest hoodie or winter hat. For all you Halloween heads, hit up aisle one for a flurry of ghostly face masks. They'll get you right in the spirit and work nicely if you're one of those, this is my costume kind of people. Plus, gift cards, t-shirts, hats, and coffee mugs for a unique gift for that person who has everything. The Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Everything that rocks your wardrobe and more.
Our latest Daily Rush video is up, and the title is Boob Sweat.
Yes, it's a chronic issue.
The weighs in on sweaty boobies.
Yeah.
And I saw, and maybe you did, on social media over the weekend, the New York Daily News actually posted this. It is a product called the Tata Towel. And it's this thing that hangs over the women's shoulder, and it's a towel that cups your breasts. Have you guys seen this? I have a picture of it here.
It's the dumbest. And I watched the video. If women don't like bras, they're going to effing hate this.
Is it to be worn under your clothes?
Well, that's what I don't know. I don't think it's for under your clothes.
No,
why would you wear this?
I think it's after you, maybe around the house.
If you're held as a sex slave on Jupiter, perhaps.
Or I was curious if you wear it as a, as clothing.
To church?
Yeah. So it's this thing that hangs around.
Sweaty boobies today, Miss Jones?
It's as if you were just hanging a towel around your neck.
Right. Yeah.
But the, you know, like a fitted sheet?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has it fits around your boobs.
It's under the
boob.
Like a duvet.
And pulls them up.
Not a duvet. No, it's like got the elastic sheet around it. Yeah. I don't know how they, you know, there's got to be something that goes around the neck that makes it tighter so it can fit everybody.
And it is. And they show, in the video, they show the woman reaching back and tying it.
Adjusting okay. It. See, I'm pretty sure. No, I'm positive that I already know the answer to this question. But
women have boobies.
No, Kathy, will you wear this? Wear us.
Well,
like after a workout. And
no. Will you try it on in the studio?
Dude, I didn't even consider that because
it's so laughable.
She wouldn't even wear like a bikini top, right, and we're going to do a swim thing.
Would
or
you wear it first, Keith?
Yes, I will. You know I will.
But no, I wouldn't. I would never use it. It's like just another added thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's no time. There's no time for boob towels.
There's no time for boob towels. Yeah. When would you? Again, there's no application. There's no time of the day. When mom wants to just kick back.
got that off.
But I was thinking like a post-workout thing, you know, you might take a shirt off and then throw a towel around. I don't know.
Just towel your knockers off.
But it pulls the bottom side up.
Up a little
and
bit.
Lets them hang, it, and lets
some
them
air out.
Not touch skin on skin. If you have large boobs, the bottom part is going to hang on
all
your
right
torso. That's what it's about. That's what it's for.
I think you could achieve the same thing with wedges of cheese.
You could do that. Yeah. You could probably do that. And hang on a second. Actually, I have somebody who has ordered one. They're a little pricey, I think, too. So let me go to Stacy. Hi, Stacy. How you doing?
Hey, how are you guys? You rock.
No, thank you so much. So you ordered a Tata towel.
Yeah.
And what situation will you be using this product?
After my shower, because I have breasts that are not, you know, the size of tiny kiwis, and it sucks to have that moisture under there.
Okay. And just a quick towel off doesn't quite do it. You want to let them kind of dry off for a minute or two.
Out.
Okay.
Couldn't you get like an air gun or like a pneumatic drill?
You know, so, the problem with that is that they're so costly.
They are.
All right.
Well, how much moisture is under there? I mean,
first of all, Stacy, what cup size? What size bra do you wear?
D.
A D. Okay. And
So they're not ridiculously large, right. But at the same time,
they're damp.
I can't even walk outside without getting swamp ass. I'm going to want something for my boots.
Okay, all right. I understand that. Well, so you have D-size, D-cup. Okay, so I was, and let me ask your opinion on this, Stacey, because there's another story that I have here that's a Playboy model. Her name is Lindsay Pelaez.
Yes.
She has natural 30 double H boobs. Oh, my gosh. And she says they're more of a curse than a blessing. And she says she has back pain and it's hard to
smile.
Oh,
my God.
It's hard to smile when she takes these Instagram pictures and all that stuff. So I was just curious. But with that... So large breasts can be a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
So, Stacey, and anyone with large boobs, if you want to chime in, what would be pros and cons of being well endowed, of having big old sweaty knockers?
Having big old
sweaty knockers.
Yeah. Okay, in my opinion,
it's
a blessing for everyone who wants to see them and touch them, but not everyone who has them.
All right. So it benefits the user as opposed to the owner.
Exactly.
All right.
And do you ever use them to say to get free things? And
yes.
Whatnot?
No. I'm not that kind of person. I'm classy.
Okay.
See,
I wouldn't be classy. I would use them like crazy.
Yeah, you can use them to get free things. Can you use boobs to get free things? Right?
Absolutely.
Probably.
Yeah. You can.
Right. But you did say all the time, so how do you use them?
What do you mean? Well, that's private. Come on.
All right.
Thank you, Stacey. I appreciate it.
She says, well, Sophia Vergara, for example, if we're going down this path, I was reading a story that she says, you know, and she's married to that Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, Manganiello.
Right. So, who is a super fitness freak. The dude's cut up like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She says it is impossible for her to do push-ups.
Oh, really?
Because
she physically can't
go down. She physically cannot do push-ups.
I believe that.
Yeah. And so, and it's clearly hurt her career.
You know what it would be like, Steve? You know how they use chains in the workout?
Yes. Yeah.
So as they come up off the floor... You're lifting more weight.
Oh.
So that'd be the same thing with the boobs. As they rest down, it's a little lessened. But as you come up and then they actually get physically off the ground, there's more weight. So you could, you know what I mean?
You just came up with a great idea for the gym. Replace those unsightly chains with fake boobs.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Wouldn't that be great? For guys, just put them around your neck?
So I would think that I'm sure I've given free things for boobs before over the years.
Have you... Okay.
Because we always have promotional items and stuff like that.
Well, there's three or four major boob stories in the news, and we're going to rip the lid off this, damn it.
In the news.
This just in.
Yes.
It turns out huge knockers get you free stuff. We now go to Jim Lukaszewski at the Pentagon.
Yes, that's right, Tom. I just saw a busty woman gain access without showing any ID whatsoever.
I thought so.
Dude, I'm sure you could get in places for free and...
It'd have to be that kind of girl, Preston.
I guess so.
I mean, do you use your huge junk to gain access to place?
I do.
Do you? We have to take a look at my huge penis right this way, sir. Get this man the best table in the house. He has inordinately large junk.
Well, let me go to Teresa, who probably has large boobs, too, because most Teresas do. Hi, Teresa. Good morning.
Is that a fact?
Really? I don't know.
Good morning.
Just felt like saying, hey, Teresa, do you have large breasts?
I do.
What size are you?
36J.
J! Oh, no!
All natural.
All right, and you win, apparently. No, so what about this? First of all, what about this ta-ta towel?
Well, when I get home, the first thing I'm going to do is rip my bra off. But because they're so big, I don't want that skin on my skin.
Because they're so big, you what?
I don't like that skin on skin feeling.
Right.
I normally wear an oversized t-shirt and kind of fold that under.
Ah.
So this would eliminate that. I could just wear this under a t-shirt and not have to worry about constantly tucking something in there.
So I guess this is a thing. It looks like one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It looks like...
I thought so too. But the more I thought about it, the more I figured just, why not?
All right. So you're going to get one?
I am.
All right. Nice. And
Jay. They only go up to H, so I might have to...
You got to squeeze into that.
That sucks.
Hey, what is... So pros and cons of boobs that big?
Cons is I wear t-shirts and look like a porn star.
Okay. All right.
And then pros
likewise.
Are...
The pros are for everyone else that gets to look at them.
That's the same thing.
Same thing the other woman said.
The last caller said.
That on a personal level, like this Lindsay Pilos, who, I don't know if you follow her on Instagram. Some people do, I guess.
Like, well, why? I mean, why do I even do that?
Yeah, the girl locally, Nick Abigail
Ratchford.
Yeah. I sent you an article from the New York Post. She's putting that she's making money off her inordinately large boobs.
Teresa, do you like the extra attention that your big boobs get you?
No.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I could see that.
Huh. I used to, but not anymore. Now, I mean, I work in an office, and I feel like I always have to have a jacket or a cover up or something. And
or would you ever go the other way and go and just wear your ta-ta towel to work?
I might now.
All right.
So, comfy.
Teresa, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
35.
All right. So, but when you were 22, something like that, they're much more fun, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I had it. Yeah, I was the F cup when I was 22, and I would go to clubs. I actually had a T-shirt that just said "They're real."
Really?
Got me more free drinks than anything I've ever had.
See,
there you go.
Well, that's what I was thinking when you said free drinks.
I wonder if you can get reduced mortgage rates.
That would be amazing.
You know,
yeah.
Like the lending tree.
I will bet you can. Yeah.
Well, let me see what I can do. You know what? We'll throw in the undercoating.
Thanks, Teresa.
So there's an obvious thing like the free drinks and stuff like that. What would you think? Again, call in if you've gotten something more, you've gotten more of an accommodation than just free drinks because of your buxomness. I think that would be like a holy grail. In fact, did you get the holy grail because of your...
The other classic is
Cup of Christ. Did you get the Cup of Christ because you have huge cans?
The other classic / easy one is getting out of tickets, you know, getting out of a speeding ticket or whatever, and it's just unbuttoning the blouse.
Mm-hmm.
I do that all the time and nothing.
Never works.
Let me go to...
Ooh, this button popped.
Let me go to Denise. Hi, Denise. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Denise. All right, so what did you get because of your enormous boobs? Which, by the way... I know, I'm trying to make them bigger each time I talk to somebody.
Of your incredibly huge breasts.
What?
No, I definitely used mine to my advantage. When I was 19 or 20, I went and I worked over the summer at Hooters in between college.
Nice.
And so I made friends with this one regular guy, and I didn't hook up with him or anything. He said one day during my lunch break, I was doing a double, and he said... So do you want to go on a shopping spree? And he took me over to King of Prussia to Macy's, and I got to pick whatever I wanted.
Now, what if... That is very cool, but what if he had taken you to, like, Acme instead?
Help yourself.
Produce and dairy. Anything you want. Denise, we knew... actually, one of our President Steve girls, Samantha. She had a guy, and it was nothing it was nothing sexual for her. It might have been for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he would take her to King of Prussia, exactly the same location. They would go from store to store. She had a friend with her, like a sort of a bodyguardish guy who would sort of hang back, and he would buy her all sorts of stuff.
He had to walk behind her.
Yeah. Right, like a submissive.
She had to shame him.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Buy me this, you miserable bastard.
Yeah, yeah.
And he loved it.
Yeah, you know what?
My mother met my father.
A lot of these girls that are on Instagram, they have a, like, Amazon wish list.
Yep.
And they just, you know, it's just there.
There's a wish list.
And you can just buy them, you know, and it will just come to your house.
Denise, what did you purchase?
I purchased underwear, bra, outfits like dresses, pants, shirts. I got everything. Actually, the only thing I didn't get was shoes, but I got everything else.
Well, you'd never see them.
And how much do you think you ended up getting free merchandise-wise?
I'd say it was probably close to $500.
Nice.
Now, did you have to show him your boobs?
I didn't. The only thing was at the end when he dropped me back off at Hooters, he did try to kiss me, and I backed away, and I was like, no, sorry.
No. I saved that for my boyfriend.
Right. All right. Thank you, Denise. Appreciate it.
I don't know. You know what? Maybe in a similar scenario, and maybe it speaks to how shallow I am, maybe I would if I had... If
yeah.
I...
I remember years ago when I was in college, a girl at one at a Burger King liked me and would give me free fries occasionally. But
here,
bragger.
It was about you can tell people you know me.
Here's some other. Let me go to Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, Jamie? What'd you get?
I've actually gotten free tattoos.
Because of your breasts. Because of your gigantic, milky boobs.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. Okay.
All right, so you're large. How big are we talking, by the way?
36 double D.
All right, and a lot of people don't realize that tattoos can be very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Very expensive. So put a dollar worth on how much you received in tattoo consideration.
Probably about $500.
Okay.
Nice. That seems to be the going price these days. Jamie, so where did you receive them on your body? You didn't have to get it on your boob, did you?
I also have my nipples pierced.
Okay. Me too.
Yeah. All right.
So I have one on my, I have Betty Boop on my nipple as the devil.
Huh.
Kathy?
That was free.
Oh, Kathy was looking. Kathy just said she was looking for a perfect nipple tattoo. I think that's it.
Tattoo on your
she's
nipple.
Sitting right on my nipple, yeah.
I need to see a picture of that. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to be pervy here, but...
How could you be pervy in a conversation like this?
Yeah.
I'm on my way to work now, but I'd be happy to send it to you.
All right.
In fact, anyone who's happy to send us their pictures.
Send it care of Joe Bell.
Okay, so free tattoo. There you go. There's some freebies as well.
I want something more. I want you in a platonic way with no sex transacted, but like the guy's buying you something. Give me the most expensive dollar amount we can get.
What? Okay, well, I'm going to get what we have. I don't think we're going to get giant expensive stuff. Let me go to Morgan here. Hey, Morgan, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good, Morgan. So, number one, how big are your boobs?
I have 34 triple D's.
34 triple D. Wow.
Oh, no!
Okay. And you have gotten what for free?
I've gotten a ton of swords from the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair.
All right. So, Morgan, is this just guys randomly showing up at your home in, say, like Bryn Mawr with swords? Or are you, do you work at the Renaissance Fair?
No, I don't work there. I just showed up. And I was wearing a tight-laced corset.
Uh-huh.
And during the pirate auction, they'd say, who wants this for free? And people would just start bouncing in their corsets. And a lot of times people would bounce out of them, and they would win free stuff.
Is that what happened with you?
No, I was able to keep mine under control, but barely.
So Preston has a whole bunch of Ren Faire swords.
I do.
What bounced out on your situation, Preston?
It was
it your huge junk?
My huge junk.
This gallant lad has a huge penis.
I know what you're talking about because there's this pirate ship and the guys are kind of up high while they're doing the...
Is that a thing they do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do a sword auction.
Oh.
And so, and sometimes they'll have free ones and they'll give them out into the crowd. And so they have a good view, a really good view of anybody who's got some cleavage. And by the way, you want to see cleavage?
Ren Faire.
Go to the Ren Faire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all over the place.
And people are so happy to take pictures with you, too.
Yes.
Milady has large, sweaty honkers. wouldst thou care to partake of a boob towel? A tata rag, if I may.
All right. So, and what did you do with all your swords, Morgan?
Went to war.
Hanging up in my house next to my throne.
You have a throne?
Yes, I have a throne. It's hand-carved. It's red and gold.
Morgan, you sound pretty awesome. How did you get this throne?
You know, you can find a lot of really fun.
She showed
stuff
her vagina.
You really can. I paid like $400 for it, and I looked up. If I wanted to get another one, I'd have to pay around $3,000.
My good lady, thy clam doth entrance me. I shall give you this throne carved of ivory.
I don't mean
you
to
can
sound...
carve ivory again.
I don't mean to sound pervy, but
it is completely sounds pervy.
Morgan, I need a picture of you naked on the throne with a midget. Okay.
Why would that sound pervy? I think any journalist would ask for that.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Morgan.
It's in a world I've of, I already had my fiance ask, so no worries.
All right. He's into
the gal that you follow on Instagram, Hoppy Floppy.
Oh yeah,
she gets tons of free beer.
Beer, and then you know she was wearing a nice little
thing, number, red number, that I believe she got off of her Amazon wish list.
Oh, she has a wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One of those dealies.
I don't know.
All right, here's one that I like. We have Heather on the line. Hey, Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Heather?
I was calling in. I am a 38 triple D.
Wow.
And
what is that clip?
Very young.
Well, hang on a second. That's from Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, well, there's Ryan.
And know him saying, I love you.
Okay.
Logo!
All right, anyway. Go ahead, Heather.
Oh, God, I love you.
I started at a very young age. I was like fifth grade already in a D, which was insane.
What? No.
Happens. It happens. It definitely happens. Mm-hmm. Okay.
My sister's got all the height. I got all the boobs.
All right.
So... mine have gotten me out of everything. I got pulled over. It was when I was in college. I got pulled over. My inspection was expired. I didn't have any proof of insurance on me. I didn't have registration, anything. And I was speeding.
And you had a Kia Coke in the passenger seat.
I know, right? And I got told, oh, honey, it's okay. You're totally good to go. I didn't get any ticket, nothing. I've gotten bumped up to first class on flight.
So when it's Heather, ooh, first class is a pretty good thing. Do you, when it's happening, is it overt? Do they say, do you just know it? Do you know immediately that's why you're getting the consideration?
Oh yeah. Well, you can tell because the way they look at you.
Yeah.
And then they start talking a little sweeter to you. Mm-hmm. They start making conversation more with you. They're not just like checking you in. They're like, you know, I'm gonna push you to this.
You know what? I'm gonna put a little extra quinoa in this for you.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes, and now that I'm married, my husband just laughs. He's like, "Babe, hey, babe, go up and see if you can get this."
That's what I was wondering. Totally. I was wondering if guys with flashier, you know, women, more, you know, in this case, buxom, mm-hmm, will use that for their own gain.
Oh, my wife definitely did when we were getting for some improvements that needed to get done on our
really?
Property.
Mm-hmm.
She made sure she wore the proper clothing.
Really?
Let me ask you something.
Oh, yeah.
Does everyone get buy one window, get one free?
No. That's a deal I have with Window Nation.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
And I show them my balls to get
I'm
that.
Just wondering.
Do anything to get windows. No, but anyhow, wearing the proper attire to possibly use as an advantage? Absolutely.
Did you ask that she do this?
I didn't. And that's why I love her so much. And she did on her own that it was.
Have you ever seen her work like at a restaurant? Mm-hmm. Has she ever gotten a sword?
No, not a sword.
Listen, I got to tell you something. I just would really love to have a sword right there. Excuse me? A sword like a Renaissance fair. Do you know what that is? I'll be right back.
I'll be back in an hour. All right, thank you, Heather, by the way. So anyhow, this model, Lindsay Pellis, her 30 HH boobs, she says they're more of a curse than a blessing. But
I think that's what you say to sort of, you know, to amp your stock a little bit. Because
well, I don't know, man. We knew a gal who was who worked at with us in radio years and years ago. Young girl, intern, had very, very large. She said they were excruciating, hurt her back all the time. She ended up getting a reduction and was much happier afterwards.
I wasn't as happy, but
I know. But
hey, also,
think about us for crying out loud.
Yeah, come on, please. Yeah.
It said, I saw something God, I highlighted that her boobs weighed 11 pounds.
11 pounds on her chest, yes.
All right, so I guess that's 5.5 on each.
Yep.
Ish.
Yep.
Or 8 on one and 3 on the other.
It happens. It happens. We weigh boobs in here.
It's actually called Vulcan syndrome, believe it or not, where one breast is inordinately larger or smaller than the other.
Right. We always call that Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But when we weighed boobs here in the studio, mm-hmm. what was the heaviest boob we got?
I don't
200 pounds.
No, it wasn't anywhere near 5 pounds, was it?
I don't think so.
We should probably do that again.
Yeah, we could.
Well, we need an appropriate scale.
No, you're right.
You know what?
Precision Solutions, we can call
Precision Solutions, mm-hmm. or take them to a truck weigh station and then just subtract their body weight.
Or we just have Gary Lauer come in and
no. I'll do it.
Yeah.
This
one weighs about.
Sorry, I got to go clean myself up. This Lindsay Pilas, if you see her prior to her, there has been a total transformation because I saw pictures of her prior to her modeling career.
Yeah.
And she was very attractive, but she's gone full mega lips.
Oh.
Pinched nose.
I don't like that.
Don't do that. Uh-uh. Don't do that.
No. All right, but anyhow, so this all these events came together. We have the new Daily Rush video, Boob Sweat. We have this actress or this model saying that her big boobs hurt. And then the Tot towel, all the rage on social media over the weekend.
Look at the guys think they have lines. I'm reading some of the comments. Are your watermelons as juicy as they look?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that's when I knew.
I want to be your lover.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Mamacita. What guys,
We'll post.
What does that say? Choose me. Do you, anybody speak Spanish?
Baby. Can you do?
Nah.
Where
I don't
is
know
it?
What
Where are you? Oh, I
see. Yeah. Top. Ernesto.
Mamacita, choose me. Asma, tuyo, baby. Can you doing this?
Can you doing this?
What is this?
Right. Yes, you had inquired if I can doing this. I cannot doing this. Thank you.
I've never heard them referred to as watermelons before either.
It says water.
Watermelons with water. Two L's.
Watermelons are very juicy. Are they juicy as they look?
Like
oh, my God. Thing. I would love to go to any type of a cassavas or honeydews or cantaloupes.
Yeah. There you go.
Can you doing this?
The Tot. We'll see if that takes off or not. All right. Let's take a break and we will come back in just a moment. Stay with us.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre Final.
Brought to you by Horizon Services. Horizon Services takes the stress out of fall heating problems by taking $50 off any heating repair, plus get a free 1-inch filter, 2-year guarantee included. HorizonServices.com.
Well, police say, and I love this story, an out-of-shape seafood thief apparently didn't think his entire cunning plan through. 48-year-old Eric Williams entered a grocery store, then grabbed one or more bags of peeled crawfish tails. Employees say the suspect ran from the store with the bagged crawfish tails. However, witnesses told police the suspect was so winded from running that he struggled to blow into his ignition interlock device to start his car.
This was just poorly planned.
Adding insult to injury, police say employees in the store stood by taking pictures, inviting him to give up and come back inside.
So he's just sitting in his car wheezing?
After many huffs and puffs, Williams was able to start the vehicle and flee the scene.
I'm out of here.
Police found Williams at his home not long after the alleged crawfish heist. When confronted, Williams allegedly claimed that he had been at work until 4:30, and police placed Williams under arrest after telling him it wasn't even 4:30 yet when they got him. So he didn't make it. He had a few mistakes along the way.
But he loves his crawfish.
A southwestern Pennsylvania man who claims he robbed a bank, stole a car, and rammed the state police cruiser at the urging of a talking cat has been ordered to spend 2.5 to 5 years in prison.
Come on, ram the car.
The judge also ordered 51-year-old James Schroyer to have a mental health evaluation.
Oh, apparently, they think he might be crazy?
He's hearing voices and stuff.
Hey, so the cat doesn't talk?
A criminal... The cat does not indeed talk.
This is not one of those talking cats.
A criminal complaint indicates Schroyer told police he was urged by the cat to rob the First National Bank in Connellsville.
Now, mind you, the dog tried to talk him out of it.
Schroyersville eventually rammed a police car.
That's just crazy talk.
Don't listen to that cat.
That thing craps in the box. You going to listen to that?
He told police that the cat was telling him to hit the cops.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, he's gonna
go. I hope they handcuff the cat.
A man who was found drunk in his child's playhouse has appeared in court. This is out of the UK. The ex-partner of Richard Lewis.
Hell, I'm growing.
The ex-partner of Richard Lewis had called police after finding him drunk outside her home.
I've become a giant.
When officers arrived.
Look at that. I can't even get through the door.
They found him asleep.
I must have had radiation.
They found him asleep inside the playhouse. Police opened the door and found Lewis was asleep.
Don't come in here. I'm a giant.
And could not be woken even when they shook him.
Look at his teacup. So tiny.
Officers brought him to his feet and he was placed in handcuffs.
Hey, you're giants too.
This appeared to wake him up. Lewis then began swearing at police and told them, "It's my house." He later pleaded guilty to being drunk and disorderly.
I love that.
A mother feasted on sponges and sand after developing insatiable cravings for both throughout her pregnancy.
Sponges and sand.
Yeah. Kelly Marie Pierce's strange 20-a-day habit saw her munch her way through thousands of sponges washed down with piles of sand.
You ate sand? That's right.
When she was pregnant with baby Lola and son Lucian.
Okay.
But I can't believe we have an application
for that clip.
Yeah.
But thank God of these lunatics who eat sand and sponges.
But despite her fondness for the bizarre snack, which she would often stack together to make sponge and sand sandwiches.
They are good.
Both her children were
born they're grilled.
Healthy and unharmed.
And very absorbent.
Mrs. Pierce said it tasted really good at the time.
They don't have to wear diapers because it just seeps right back into their skin.
She said it was really satisfying. It was exactly what I needed. I was getting through bowls and bowls of sand a day.
How can you eat that amount of sand and eat sponges and not die?
Right?
I wasn't eating anything else but sand and sponges.
Well, that to me, I've seen the food pyramid recently. I don't see sand and sponges on that.
She said it's like when you really fancy a bit of chocolate and you finally get a piece of it.
No.
It's so satisfying.
No, chocolate is something that you eat.
The full-time mother suffered from pica disorder throughout the pregnancies, which causes victims to crave objects that are not food. Her unusual cravings started 5 months into her first pregnancy with Lucian, now four, and were sparked when her mother-in-law was changing the sand in her parrot's cage.
You keep sand in a parrot's cage?
I guess it's something similar to newspaper or cat litter.
Okay.
She explained, I kept getting this weird taste in my mouth. I knew I was craving something but could not put my finger on what it was until I saw the sand, and that's when I knew I wanted it. Then when I saw her change the sand in the parrot's cage, I thought I could just eat that.
Okay.
And I asked her if I could have some, and I started eating it. She thought I was crazy, but let me carry on.
You know, she was crapping precious moments figures.
When sand didn't hit the spot, she turned to sponges and scoffed her way through packets a day and even combined the two to make sponge sand sandwiches, as
and,
I said.
And speaking of crapping, wouldn't that gut you if you're expelling that much sand?
You would think so, right?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's a crazy world.
The habit of eating non-edible objects could arise from some sort of deficiency. Some sufferers eat dirt. I've heard of that before.
Yeah, dirt eaters.
And many of them are found to lack iron, which is present in soil. Others develop the condition because of extreme stress, though it's not clear why. A spokesperson for BEAT, the Eating Disorders Charity, said, we do on occasion get people coming in to say to us they're suffering from this condition. It doesn't provide any nutritional intake at all and can have long-term health implications.
We had a guy in the studio, remember, who was eating mouthfuls of sand.
Yeah.
And he liked the tactile feel of it on his teeth.
Dude, even just a grain, if you're at the beach or something like
so
that.
So annoying.
Even just
so
the
annoying.
Tiniest bit that might get in your mouth, it's repulsive.
Yeah.
You just
every time I get sand on the sponge I'm eating, I hate it.
Ah, it's nasty. You want to wipe it off.
Yeah.
So anyhow. And that is what I have in the bizarre file for you. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Act
Acme Markets proudly supports Preston and Steve's Camp Out for Hunger, beginning Monday, November 16th at Xfinity Live inside the Wells Fargo Center complex. More this year than most, we really need your help to make Camp Out a success. You can make a difference right now. Visit your local Acme during October and November and make a donation at the register when you check out. Acme will ensure your generous gift goes right to Phil Abundance to purchase food that's a lifeline for area families in need. Go to WMMR.com for complete details and a list of especially needed food items. Camp Out for Hunger from Acme Markets and 93.3 WMMR, putting Philly first.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Brought to you by AutoPartsExpert.com for hard-to-find brand-name parts in stock and in our area. Order your parts and pick them up in about 30 minutes. AutoPartsExpert.com.
All right, Mr. Morrison, what do you have for us this morning?
Well, according to Star Magazine, Katy Perry is being trolled by boyfriend John Mayer, who the magazine suggests has full power over her. According to a, quote, inside source, Katy knows that if John walks, all she'll be left with is an amazingly successful career, millions upon millions of dollars, and very large natural breasts.
Yeah.
Jessica Simpson shares four things she wants her kids to know in a new guest blog post for Parents Magazine. Simpson says easily the most important thing for her kids to know is that Aunt Ashley didn't always drink like that. And finally, as part of the 90th birthday celebration, Bob Barker will return to The Price is Right for a tribute that will involve him hosting a few segments. When asked if he had any fear about remembering how to do it, Barker remarked, quote, no, it's just like riding a showcase model. You never forget.
Yes. Excellent. All right. Thank you, Steve. Our next guest, I have secretly, under my breath, been saying what I think is the correct pronunciation of his name over and over. And I'm going to try this. He is known as the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele.
Ukulele.
Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Let me try his name. Jake Shimabukuro? No, not even close.
No, yeah. Shut up. No. Right?
Yeah.
This is Jake, everybody. Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I'm probably saying it wrong.
How do you say it, Jake?
Well, I say Shimabukuro.
Shimabukuro.
But I don't even know if that's right.
So. Yeah. Well, you get the right to say how your name is pronounced. So, yeah. And then I was telling you, Jake, I watched a documentary on you last night, and that was one of the parts of it was some people having difficulty with your name, which is part of the deal. So it's something you've encountered on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
You never thought to change it to Schwarzenegger or anything? Or nothing like that?
Or Humperdink or something?
Humperdink,
like
right. Humperdink, yeah.
Where did this moniker, the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele, come from?
It actually started with an article in the LA Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the title of the article. It was the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele, and I was doing a show. I think I did the Playboy Jazz Festival.
Wow.
And I think that's where it kind of came from.
Right, well, how does one rise in the ranks of a musician and an expert in this particular instrument?
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I mean, this is all new to me. I mean, I never dreamed that I'd be doing what I'm doing today, you know, but it all started with a YouTube video, you know, going viral. And I think there was a video about 7 years ago. I was in Central Park and I played an arrangement of George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Okay.
And it went viral. And it was from this video that I got invited by other artists to tour with them. So in the last few years, I've been able to go out with Jimmy Buffett, Ziggy Marley, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, Bette Midler, Yo-Yo Ma. I mean, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, one video, you know, changed my life.
So. And George was a big fan of the ukulele.
Yeah.
I know that he really enjoyed, for his own person. Paul McCartney tells a story that if he would go over to dinner at George's house after dinner, he'd break out a couple of ukuleles and just kind of sit around and jam.
Yeah.
Well, the ukulele was, and I was learning it. I was watching, boning up on my ukulele lore.
Ukulele history.
It was the most popular instrument in the United States for a while. It was because it's four strings and two octaves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was watching this documentary on you, and I found it really fascinating because you picked it up from it connects you to your mother. Your mother was. She played as well. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's it follows sort of your journey through getting the most out of it. You almost embrace the fact that it was restrictive in its
capability, and you wanted to see how much you could push the boundaries of it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
At a certain point, you sort of bastardized the sound in your life. You were trying to, you know, putting it, channeling it and putting processing on it and so on and so forth. Then you realized the real key would be to just do what you could do with your fingers, the sound to get out of the instrument and keep it pure. You sort of went on a musical journey with it.
Yeah. I mean, like everyone else. I mean, even guitar players, right? You start with just your guitar.
Right.
And then you buy an amp. And then you buy your first Boss pedal. Right. And then next thing you know, you have 60 pedals, right? And then you start weaning away from the pedals. And then, you know, you come down to like two or three of your favorites. But it was kind of like that. You know, I'm really into, like, you know, martial arts philosophy and all that.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole white belt to black belt. And then it's like, you know, purifying your soul back to the white belt again. So it's kind of like starting out with just your instrument, and you go through this whole process, you know, and then it's like coming back to just the instrument.
It took off for you when you revisited, came back to the purity of it. That's when it became what it
that's
is.
That's when it happened.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. wild.
Now, Jake, is your show, number one, is it all instrumental?
It's all instrumental. I'm a horrible singer. People ask me to sing. They ask me to sing all the time. They hear me once, and they never ask me again.
Do you have an accompaniment?
No, it's just you.
Just
me. Yeah.
That's impressive.
It's a lonely life. It's just not. You know?
Yeah, but there's no overhead. It's you.
Oh, my God.
When you stand.
Well,
you
see,
know?
Bill Cosby, he told everyone when he introduced me at the jazz festival, he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the cheapest man in show business, Jake Shimabukuro." You know,
you got to go to like U2 concerts and just laugh when you stadiums full of, you know, nine semi-tractor trailers out, and it just you walk in, you know, you're a tiny instrument to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, what's the creme de la creme? It's described in the documentary. What is the finest ukulele on earth?
Well, this is it's a Kamaka ukulele. They're all handcrafted in Hawaii, and they were the first family to start manufacturing these instruments in the world about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
They learned from the Portuguese immigrants who came over to the islands how to build these instruments.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And for a while, it became sort of a novelty thing. It'd be sort of jokey, Tiny Tim and so on and so forth, and then slowly it started to get rediscovered for the beautiful sounds it could generate.
Yes, definitely. I mean, in the 20s, you know, the ukulele became very popular. And then again, in the 50s, you know, it was on television shows. You know, Elvis Presley played it in his movies. And I mean, Tiny Tim and
Marilyn Monroe in Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So became a very popular instrument.
I told you guys, I follow a couple of ukulele players on YouTubers, Julia Nunes and Molly Lewis, who we had here in our studio.
Oh, nice.
Do you know those two?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we had Molly come by here, and I love Julia's stuff. And I just, it's a pleasant sound. There's something nice about it. Mm-hmm. And let's get some of that. I'm dying to hear you perform some for us. If you don't mind, we can do this a couple of times if you'd like. By the way, piggybacking off of Steve's questions about the top of the line ukulele, what's the most expensive one you've ever heard of?
Oh, I mean, you know, people will pay an arm and a leg for, you know, for like an old vintage ukulele. I'm not a collector.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, if it's not a functioning instrument,
you could care less.
Buy it. Yeah.
What's a big price tag for one?
Like probably about $5,000.
Okay.
$5,000.
Yeah.
It's not like a Steinway.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a lot smaller.
Right,
uses a lot less wood, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear a song. And what are you going to play for us?
Well, here's the, you know, we were talking about the George Harrison "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," you know, tune. So here's that arrangement.
All right, here we go.
That's awesome.
You know what?
Beat the hell out of that thing.
you played a it was a classical piece or something in the documentary, but you're very on stage. You're moving and you're into it, and you're hunched over like a rock star and the whole thing, and your hands are flipping all over the place. I couldn't even figure out what the hell you were doing. But on another note, Preston's been playing isolating. You know, all these vocal tracks from classic rock songs have been available now, where you'll get, like, from Under Pressure, Freddie Mercury and David Bowie isolated, and you get a new appreciation for the song. When I hear you, like, for example, In My Life,
yes,
it makes you rediscover and reappreciate the beauty of the original. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
It's a new way to experience something that you love to be. And as with this, it's you realize, first off, your genius and the genius of George Harrison.
Yeah.
And that's got to be cool for you as an artist to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's you know, like for me, I've always been a real stickler for melody. I mean,
yeah.
Whenever I'm arranging a tune, you know, at least for the first passage, always being as true to the melody as possible. You
yeah.
know, especially if I'm covering someone else's song. I mean, to me, it's, you know, just to honor and respect the artist that you're covering, you know?
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, so, you know, whether you're taking a song like While My Guitar Gently Weeps, or even something like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, which
you know,
is cool.
It's like really just honing in on the beauty of the melody. It's
Wait
it's,
a minute, you do Bohemian Rhapsody on the ukulele? Really?
Here, I'll play a little bit.
I mean, I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around
it'll blow your mind.
It's a 7-minute piece, but I'll play a little bit of it. So you have the cool thing about this piece is, you know, like I think what a lot of people forget is you get so caught up in the production of the piece that you forget how beautiful the actual melody is. You know, so if. I'm sorry.
And that's why to jump on that, that's why we've been enjoying taking these isolated vocal tracks from these songs. There's so much in the arrangement. There's so many great things around it in the production that really add to the beauty of what it is. But at the core of it, at the heart of that piece of music is this melody that you can't let go of. Mm-hmm. And stripping it down can remind you of that.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, you know, like in the case of Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, stripping it down to basically 4 strings and 2 octaves, you know, you got the intro. Right, which sounds like, and then you have this then the next section, the B section, you have this beautiful piano part, right? And then the melody comes in. Then it goes into that comical section,
right,
where it's almost like a rock opera thing. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then you finally got the big rock part.
This is so amazing.
As the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele, do you play any Jimi Hendrix?
I do, actually.
What do you do?
Here, do you recommend it?
I assume that. Do you do Little Wing?
Little Wing, yeah. Let's see.
Yeah.
You know, Jake,
I like the harmonics in there. That's awesome, man.
You say something in the documentary that resonated with me, because it'd be the same, you know, with comedy. You found the beauty of the pauses, you know, and letting the stuff breathe a bit. And it took you a while, I guess, to come back and discover that it's those quiet little, you know, those moments that the silence plays as much a part as the.
Yeah, well, you know, because like Jay was talking about that earlier, I think he mentioned, you know, about the timing, you know, the comic, you know, the timing is so important. And when I was a kid, one of my heroes was Bill Cosby, of course.
Yeah.
And for me, his HBO special, Bill Cosby Himself.
It's great.
Yeah. To me, that was like my go-to, you know, as far as like inspiration, and just a, you know, just that performance served as a great mentor, you know, how to perform, you know, I mean, how to tell a story. I mean, even as a musician, you know, it's all about timing. It's all about phrasing. And it's the subtle things, you know, in the performance that allows the audience to connect with what you're doing. And Bill Cosby was just a master at that, you know. So that's actually what inspired me to, or at least to help give me some confidence to be a solo performer, you know, because especially because I'm not singing, I thought, how can I go up on stage in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people with just an ukulele and try to, you know, make this happen. But Bill Cosby goes up there with no instrument at all.
A chair.
If you're just a chair and a mic. Yep.
If you're just tuning in, it's Jake Shimabukuro, who's on the show. I said it right that time, didn't I?
Oh, that was perfect. Yeah.
Earlier this year, I had considered, I'm a percussionist, I'm a drummer by nature, but I do own a guitar, and I know a few chords, and that's it. And I can't put stuff together on my own. I'll get one of those, you know, Hal Leonard books that shows you just the basic chord progressions of songs and stuff like that. But I considered getting a ukulele because it seemed, and I don't use this in a disrespectful term, a little bit easier hand position wise. You don't have to move your fingers quite as wide apart. It seems that way. Anyway, is it an easier instrument because four strings, it's a little bit smaller for somebody who can't quite play guitar to maybe on a basic level just to learn how to play?
Yeah, no, it's no disrespect at all. I mean, for me, I'll be the first to admit that it is the easiest instrument to play.
Okay.
You know, and I tell people that one of the things that makes the ukulele so user-friendly is the absence of bass notes. You know, because with the ukulele, the tuning, you have an A, E, a C, which is like middle C on the piano, and then you have a high G for your fourth string. Okay. So your lowest note is that third string. And the cool thing about notes from middle C and above, none of those notes function as bass tones. And if you have an understanding of music, you know that bass notes have to resolve a certain way. Otherwise, it doesn't sound right. And a good example of that, if you were to walk up to a piano and you played a bunch of notes on the right side of the piano, the high keys, everything just kind of sounds like a music box. But then if you do the same thing on the left side of the piano, it just sounds all muddy and muffled, right? They don't, the bass notes don't work well together. So because of the absence of the bass note on the ukulele, you can pretty much just play anything you want, and it sounds and it sounds okay. You don't have to have any music knowledge or music theory knowledge, I should say. And so, because of that, I tell people you don't have to be a musician to play the ukulele. You know, it's a very simple instrument. It's affordable. It's portable. I think it totally fits in our lifestyle with our iPad minis and iPhone. Right. You know, it's like the iPad mini of instruments. You know, and the coolest thing about it, what I tell people all the time, is what I love about being a touring ukulele player is that audiences all over the world have such low expectations of music. You know?
My favorite band is Pearl Jam, and Eddie Vedder put out a ukulele album a few years ago. I wanted to know what your impression of it was. Casey actually does a pretty good impression of Eddie Vedder singing. We'll let that go for another time. But what did you think of Eddie's uke album?
Oh, I'm a huge Eddie Vedder fan. So when he came out with the ukulele, because I had known that he played the ukulele and he was a big fan of the instrument. But once he released the album, I mean, to me, it was a great day, because when Eddie Vedder picks up the ukulele is cool.
Legitimizes it a
yeah,
little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
He'll come out before Pearl Jam shows or before the opening act sometime, and he'll intro the show, and he'll sometimes come out with his uke and it's very simple, and it's, you know, it's not Pearl Jam, it's just Eddie up there with the uke, but it's pretty cool to see and have that experience.
But the cool thing about it is that he's playing the ukulele but he's singing as if he's with Pearl Jam.
Right.
I mean, his voice, his just the soulfulness in his voice and the and just the you know, the I guess
passion or
just the passion, the what word am I?
The resonance?
The conviction. The conviction okay. in every word and every note that he sings is just, man, it's a rock instrument.
And while you're listening to you must be thinking, well, there's no way he can touch me. I mean, he's awesome, and I got nothing to worry about here.
Listen, Jake, we have to wrap stuff up in a second here, but Steve, you were going on about his version of In My Life.
It's just magnificent. I loved it.
Is there a chance we can hear that from you before you
go? Yeah, sure.
Or is there something else you'd rather play?
No, I'd love to play that. I haven't played it in a while. You know, I actually got to play this. I flew to England a couple years ago, 2 years ago with Bette Midler.
Yeah.
And we performed this for Queen Elizabeth.
Wow.
Yeah, this excellent. Was...
Because she's basically a huge Anthrax fan.
Now, this is one of the most beautiful songs, rock songs ever written, in many people's opinion. So, all right, Jake Shimabukuro, here we go. All right. Play on the word my in my life. It sounds like a seventh chord or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
it's minor seven.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah,
this beautiful.
I love this voicing of that.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Jake, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much.
Jake Shimabukuro.
Yeah.
Take care.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a moment. More on the way, my friends.
Steve Show podcast.
Wait, turn up the sound.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.